everybody, it's episode 215 of PodQuest.
Hey, 215?
It's Tuesday, October 9th, 2018. It's Halloween month.
Yes.
I am Chris.
I'm Walnuts.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do that. I wanted to throw you off your game.
No, it's all right. I threw myself off. That's why there was that weird pause that'll probably be cut out when I edit this. But I couldn't decide if I wanted to say your name first or my name first.
But, I mean, you said your name, and then you cut.
Well, no, I paused before I said my name, too. And then I paused again, because after I said my name, I'm just like, I feel like they did that backwards.
I think you're just backwards.
It's just one of those days.
It's been one of those weeks.
You know, that's the problem with not having a set intro. Like, it's not like I just, like, drop an intro in every week.
We could.
No, because you still have the, like, episode number at the top. So I'd still have to do, like, a little bit of work. And it's easier to just do the whole thing kind of in a row. Same thing with the ending. I don't know why I've never thought about just, like, doing the ending. Like the whole spiel. But at the same time, every once in a while, we have a little something extra to throw in at, like, the end. And that would just be awkward to have, like, the spiel and then add something extra either, like, right after that or right before that.
Well, I mean, we just don't have the spiel and we just sign off. And if there's nothing, like, there wouldn't be anything extra if we didn't have the spiel. The only reason sometimes I think of something to say afterwards is because it's like, oh, right, I forgot to mention this as you were doing a spiel.
Yeah, so you get that extra, like, 45 seconds of me rambling off everything to remember last-minute details.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's been a week.
It has.
It's been a week with some stuff.
It's been an interesting week. I think.
You think?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm fighting some sort of flu cold thing going on that just sucks. So well,
you keep that shit to yourself.
No, I'm just going to sneeze all over you. Just FYI, I snotted all over that chair before you sat down.
I don't believe you.
No, I didn't.
When I got here, you're playing Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2.
True, yes.
And I don't think you would have had the forethought to do anything other than sit in that chair and play that game for...
No, that's literally all I had the forethought was just sit here and play.
I figured as much. So, first news. You familiar with Obsidian Entertainment? Or Obsidian Games?
I feel like I should be.
They did Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, the okay. Sith Lords.
Right.
They have done a bunch of other stuff, too. Like, they did, like, Neverwinter Nights 2, Fallout New Vegas, Dungeon Siege, South Park, The Stick of Truth, Pillars of Eternity, Skyforge, Pathfinder Adventures.
Okay.
I'm literally just scrolling through their stuff.
Yeah.
It is reported that they may be getting purchased by Microsoft.
Interesting.
Which, I mean, Microsoft came out at E3 this past year with, hey, we bought all these studios.
Yeah.
I know that the two big ones that are now there were Playground Games, which have done the Forza games, and Ninja Theory.
Yeah.
So Obsidian would be another kind of like big name studio for them that has done some good RPGs in the past, which is a genre that's generally thought to be lacking on Xbox hardware.
Yeah.
And I mean, so they get a lot of Western RPGs that are multi-platform, but they don't get a lot of exclusive. Like they don't get the Valkyria Chronicles, the Personas, stuff like that. Like the real heavy JRPGs, those tend to be regulated to Nintendo and Sony platforms, it seems.
Yeah, generally.
So getting somebody that makes sort of deep RPGs, even Western RPGs, is a step in the right direction for them, I would think, anyway.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting acquisition. The thing that worries me about all these purchases that Microsoft is doing, it's what's that mean for the other systems? Like, are they going to keep their things exclusive? Are they going to be more timed exclusive? Like,
so I mean, if these games are, if Obsidian is purchased by Microsoft, they're going to be Microsoft exclusive.
Yeah,
that does not mean console exclusive though. They'll probably be Windows and Xbox.
Yeah,
which I mean, a lot of the games that Obsidian has done in recent-ish years are more well known, I would think, on PC. Like, you have, like, the Pathfinder game was an Android iOS and then released on PC.
Yeah.
Pillars of Eternity, I know, came out on Xbox and PS4, but I believe it launched by a couple of years on PC.
Yeah.
And
I believe, like, Pillars of Eternity 2 is PC.
Let me see. I'm on their list still. No, it did come out on... Actually, that's right. It's even on Switch. It came out back in May. It was Switch, PS4, Xbox, Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Oh, nice.
But it looks like the first Pillars of Eternity launched in 2015 on PC and everything, and then 2017 on Xbox and PS4.
Okay.
So, like, not that their stuff doesn't come to the consoles, but I feel like it's mostly... It tends to skew towards PC players.
Yeah.
So, being PC or being Microsoft exclusive probably won't hurt them too much.
Yeah.
Or it won't hurt, like, gamers too much, I should say.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not really going to hurt them at all, because they'll still get to make games. And they might get to make bigger games because Microsoft will have the money to throw at them.
Yeah, true.
So remember all that Telltale stuff?
Yeah, that they were closing and shit, and they already have, what, like, 2 class action lawsuits against them and shit like that?
Yeah. So there were 2 pieces of news that to go along with that this week. The first one, out of Kotaku, is the rest of the staff may have been laid off.
Okay.
There's 25, like, skeleton crew that were there for Minecraft.
Yeah.
One of the employees tweeted that everybody else was laid off. I believe it was on Friday.
Hmm. I wonder, did they finish their contractual obligation, or are they just done?
I have a feeling that I guess it was Netflix is the one that they were still working for. I doubt they finished that in a week.
Yeah, true.
So I feel like maybe Netflix just pulled the plug on it and decided not to give them any more funding.
Yeah.
Which, like, that sucks. Like, the not... Like, those people knew they were going to be out of work soon, but they at least had, like, a paycheck coming in while they were looking.
Yeah.
Now they don't. Now that's 25 more people in this whole thing that are going to be out looking for jobs.
Yeah, it's bullshit.
Now, slightly brighter side of the whole thing, at New York Comic Con, Robert Kirkman announced that Skybound Games is going to be finishing Walking Dead Telltale series.
Okay.
And they're trying to get the team that was working on it onto their staff to finish the game.
Oh, all right. That's good news.
It's probably only contract work. Like, they don't have anybody yet. That's like ideally they would like the people that started it to finish it.
Yeah.
It most likely would not be a long term position for them, but it would at least be a contract where, you know, they could get right back to work. Ideally, and finish this game that they've spent, you know, a lot of time working on, while they can also be looking for a permanent job afterwards.
It gives them time to try to find a permanent job, or maybe it's contract to full hire type thing, where some of them might be able to stay on staff, others might not.
Yeah, I don't know how many games Skybound does to be, like, to, like, I don't know if they do enough games where they would want to expand and, like, actually... have people on full, or if this is just sort of, they'll bolster their ranks, get the people that worked on the game to finish the game, and then go from there.
Yeah, and maybe if they think the game is adequate enough, maybe they'll keep them on to make something else themselves, type of thing. Like, just because they don't have the people now, or don't make enough games now, doesn't mean they can't make enough games in the future.
Yeah, you are not wrong. I'm trying to think of the right way to put this. It's good news because people are going to have some work coming to them.
Yes.
It's a little, I don't know, money grabby, in my opinion. Like, because Skybound's doing it because they want the money for the game, basically.
Yeah.
Which, like, I get it. Like, they're a company. Like, they're about making money.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Like, good for them if they can finish it and actually bring the people in that lost their jobs to finish it, basically. Hopefully they do them right and actually, like... give them the resources and the time to do it correctly so that, you know, it's not a shitty situation for everybody.
Yeah.
With a shitty product coming out in the end.
Yeah.
So Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, Kingdom Hearts.
That comes out, the Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out in January.
Okay.
Square has announced a collection, let's call it, coming out in October. October 30th.
I thought they announced that. I thought we've known about that.
So... there is currently a $99 thing you can pre-order.
Right, yeah. That's
you can only pre-order on the PlayStation Store, on the PSN. For it's a pre-order for Kingdom Hearts 3 that comes with 1.5 plus 2.5 HD remix and the 2.8 final remix plus edition, whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah.
So this thing coming out on October 30th is called Kingdom Hearts The Story So Far. It is going to have 9 games in it.
Okay.
And it's only going to be $40.
It's not bad at all.
No. I mean, that's still... so, that is technically 10, No, that's the same price. That is the cost of that pre-order.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, it is easier to spend, say, $40 now.
Oh, yeah.
And $60 in January than it would be to spend this $100 now.
I'm more likely to do the $40 now or at the end of the month. I can't allocate $99 right now. But I could probably finagle $40 to be able to play all 9 of these damn games.
Yeah, and so it's going to be the... I actually have them in front of me, so I can read this, right? So it's going to be Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 plus 2.5 Remix, which comes with Kingdom Hearts Final Mix, Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories, RE Chain of Memories, Kingdom Hearts 358 by 2 days, just the HD remastered cinematics for that one.
Yeah.
Kingdom Hearts 2 Final Mix, Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep Final Mix, Kingdom Hearts Recoded HD remastered cinematics.
Yeah.
So two of them are just the movie.
Yeah.
And then it's also going to have Kingdom Hearts 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue, which has Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance HD, which is the 3DS version. Hence, Dream Drop Distance 3D.
Yeah.
Fucking goddamn. And then it's going to have Kingdom Hearts 0.2 Birth by Sleep, a Fragmentary Passage, and Kingdom Hearts X Back Cover, which is a movie.
Okay.
So it's going to have all that for $40.
Do you think this is just exactly what they're given with the pre-order?
Yeah,
except it's just people can buy it separately?
So they can buy it separately. It would also allow people to purchase a physical version of Kingdom Hearts 3. I think this might only be digital. Like, I think this is a digital collection.
That sounds reasonable.
But actually, it could be a physical pack. Right now, it's only available through the Square Enix store.
Yeah.
But it also, I found it today, so that doesn't mean that it hasn't already gone up on the PSN, because PSN updates their store on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So, but that's a lot of games.
Yeah, and $40 isn't...
That's about 3,000 hours of Kingdom Hearts.
God, yeah. And I want to play them all, so
you,
I'm...
You don't. You don't want to play them all.
I do.
You want to play 1 and 2 and Birth by Sleep, and that's fucking it.
I want to play everything. I want to learn everything I can about this series that makes no sense.
Because the more you learn, the more likely you are to have an embolism pop in your brain and drop dead.
You know what? That'd be a happy embolism, though.
It wouldn't. It would be the most disappointing one you could imagine.
But Kingdom Hearts is so good.
Is it, though?
It is.
When was the last time you played a Kingdom Hearts game?
Kingdom Hearts 2.
In 2005?
Probably 5 or 6. I think I went back and played it again at one point. That was one of few games that I've actually gone back and played multiple times.
It was 2006, because it was, by the time Kingdom Hearts 3 comes out, it'll have been 13 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 13 years ago, you played Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah.
Those originals don't hold up real well.
No.
At all.
I still have fond memories of them.
So Dream Drop Distance wasn't the worst game, but it was also a bad game.
Yeah.
It was super frustrating because of the way the mechanics worked, where you played as Sora and Riku. That's his name, right?
Yeah.
So you play as both of them, but not at the same time. That was the game where as you're training to become like the ultimate Keyblade Masters or whatever. So it's Pokemon. You literally collect enemies to fight with you because you don't have Donald or Goofy fighting with you.
Okay.
And so like you can power them up and trade them out and use the weird camera thing to like pet them and shit. But then you also had, like, it was like a 30-minute timer to get through a level. So you would run, you'd be running through a level, and when the timer hit zero, your character would literally pass out. And then you would wake back up as the other one, Sora or Riku. And they would play the same world, but the world would be slightly different with different bosses and such. Like, if I remember correctly, the Tron world for, like, Riku was super challenging, but the one for Sora was cake.
Yeah.
And, like, you could force it to sleep early, so you could run, like, Sora to a certain point of a level and be like, all right, this feels like I'm halfway through the level. I'm going to drop it now, fall asleep, pick up his Riku, and run him far so that you're not in, like, a weird situation when you fall asleep.
Yeah.
But it was still, like, it was not the best time. I played a lot of it. I got to the end, and then it got a little too grindy at the end.
Yeah.
Because it hit that point where you couldn't beat the final boss by having just played through every level all the way. You needed to go back through the levels and grind to get stronger to beat the final boss. I'm just like, nope, not fun enough for that.
Maybe your opinion's wrong. I don't know.
I think your brother agreed with that. I don't think he ever made it through that game either.
I don't know. I don't remember how. I don't really know how many of those games he actually played. So
he played almost all of them.
Yeah,
I know he played 1 and 2, and I know he played Birth by Sleep, and he played at least a good chunk of Dream Drop Distance.
Yeah,
I feel like he played Chain of Memories and probably played 358 by 2 days.
Yeah,
I think he may have done the Chain of Memories like PS2 release though, not the Game Boy Advance release.
Chain of Memory, that's the one where it's the card battle system, right?
Yes.
He had both versions. He played the 3DS version, or not 3D, the GBA version, or whatever it was. Played through that, I'm pretty sure he beat it, and then I got him the PS2 version, or PS3 version, whatever it was, when it came out on disc, and I bought it for him for Christmas.
Okay.
Or something. Because he remembered liking that game, he just didn't like playing it on the GBA.
Which is fair.
So I got it for him for, the other, whatever console.
PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Yeah,
are you sure it was, I thought it was PlayStation 3.
No. Chain of Memory, RE Chain of Memories was PS2.
Okay.
So PS3 had the HD remake the first time. I want to, if I remember correctly, the way that those games were re-released was you had, on PS3 there was the 1.5 HD remix, and the 2.5 HD remix as two separate releases.
Yeah.
And then when they ported it on the PS4, they put those two together and then also released the 2.5 or 2.8 final prologue thingy.
Yeah. The thing where two of the games are just the cutscenes.
No, that one, it's Dream Drop Distance and then literally the prologue to Birth by Sleep. It's like a 3 or 4 hour thing.
Yeah.
And that is usually the one that is the most expensive. Like, you can normally find the 1.5, 2.5 remix on sale for like $30. When it goes on sale, that I've seen it anyway, on like the PSN, 2.8 is always still 40.
Okay.
So like you're spending $40 for a game and a quarter.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
So the Nintendo Switch is reportedly getting new hardware in 2019.
Yeah, a coworker came up to me and told me about it. I didn't actually see any, I didn't look it up or anything like that. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so Polygon writes it up. It's the Wall Street Journal is reporting that a new version of the popular Nintendo Switch hardware will be arriving next year, according to suppliers and others with direct knowledge of the plan. There are few other details about what the new hardware revision would improve over the current model. The current Switch uses a low-end liquid crystal display without some technologies that are standard in more recent smartphone LCDs. Updating the display with these technologies would make it brighter, thinner, and more energy efficient. The updated Switch isn't expected to adopt the organic light-emitting diode, or OLED, panels used in Apple Inc. iPhone X series.
Okay, so it's just, yeah, it's a better definition screen on the...
Which, I mean, a better Switch. Screen could, you know, as that said, improve, you know, battery life and make it thinner and lighter and all that stuff. The Vita did a similar thing, only they did it backwards. The original Vita had an OLED.
Okay.
Like, the original Vita screen was really, really nice. But if I remember correctly, it was a little bulky. Like, a little bulkier than the second model.
Yeah.
And then the second one got rid of the OLED, but it was a little thinner and lighter.
Yeah.
Which, I don't think either of us would buy a new Switch just because it had a better screen on it.
No, I mean, but I might, because if I had the money and whatnot, I would think about it. Because I want the Let's Go Switch. I want, like, I...
But that's, if, so that is going to be the current model anyway.
Yeah, and, like, I like bringing a Switch on to go. I bring it on to go quite often, so I wouldn't mind having something lighter that I don't have to make sure I'm sitting next to a plug within the next hour and a half of playing, essentially. Like, I know the battery life's, what, 3 hours if you're playing, like, a...
It depends on the game.
Like, if it's, like, a hardcore game like Breath of the Wild, it's, like, 3 hours.
I think Breath of the Wild is less than that, actually. Yeah. Like, so, like your indies and stuff like that are what you're going to get, like, 3 or 4 hours out
of. So, I honestly wouldn't mind having something that has a little bit better battery. I would think about it if I had the extra money. I probably wouldn't trade in this one. I would keep it or figure something out. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see when it comes out and the price is announced.
Yeah, I mean, it's normal at this point. Like, 2 to 3 years in, you're going to get a hardware revision.
Yeah.
So, like, if this happens, I'd say if this happens later in 2019, like, that's kind of Nintendo's, That's what Nintendo does with handhelds.
Yeah.
Like, you figure you had the Game Boy Advance and then the Game Boy Advance SP. You had the DS and then the DS Lite. And then the DSi.
And then the 3DS. You had the
original 3DS and then you had the 3DS XL.
And then the new 3DS.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because there was the XL and then there was also the new.
And then there was the new 3DS Lite. And, yeah, there's just...
And the 2DS and the 2DS XL and the new 2DS XL. Or
and, like, the 2DS clamshell.
Well, that's like, the new 2DS.
Yeah. The 2DS originally wasn't clamshell, now the 2DS is clamshell. So it's essentially a DS again, but more powerful. It's so stupid. I hate Nintendo sometimes.
But yeah, so I mean, this wouldn't be that surprising.
Yeah.
I feel like it might be closer to a 2020 release, though, than a 2019. I see them announcing it next year, and then it coming out in 2020.
Yeah, probably late to holiday 2020.
Actually, I could see them doing it, like, March, April again, like the Switch. So... two bits of PlayStation stuff, kind of back-to-back. One of them is almost like a non-news, but it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
They announced on one of their investor call things that they are, in fact, working on next-generation hardware.
Okay.
Everyone knew that already.
Yeah.
Like, we knew there was going to be a PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Whether they're saying right now they don't know if it's going to be called the PlayStation 5. It would be fucking dumb if it's not.
It'll be called the PlayStation 5.
They have, what, 4 years of branding with that name at this point.
Yeah.
It would be really, really stupid to not name it the PlayStation 5.
Unless they do something ridiculous like the PlayStation Final, where they're never actually going to do upgrade anymore, and it's just you buy things to input in, like, pretty much a PC.
I don't think
that I doubt they would ever do that.
That would never work. As much as people want something like that.
Yeah.
Consumer, like, the general consumer cannot handle that. And that's the market they want. They want the every person. The person that buys Madden and Call of Duty every year.
Yeah.
Those are the people that buy the most stuff, usually.
Yeah.
Because they'll buy, like, every copy of Madden and every copy of Call of Duty and Battlefield and, like, all those sort of annual releases.
Yeah.
They're not the people that are going to go out every year and spend $200 on, you know, the new processor that you're going to pop into it or the new video card that'll expand on it.
Yeah. I know they won't do it and it'll be near impossible. I'm just saying, like, that's the only reason they wouldn't use a PlayStation number, because it's like, all right, this is the last one they're ever going to make and it's just going to be upgradable.
Yeah. But yeah, so of course there's a PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Most outlets have been talking about it because they have heard from somebody inside that, you know, either inside Sony or inside at a developer who's been working on games for the new generation of hardware.
Yeah.
So, but the other thing is it seems to be getting more and more likely that name changes are going to be a thing on the PSN.
Yeah, I thought that, I'm pretty sure I saw something that, or no, we talked about it last week. That's right.
Yeah, so I mean, this isn't a lot more news, but a lot of outlets are reporting that it is seeming even more likely that that is going to be announced soon. I guess a lot of developers are working on stuff to incorporate the name changes.
Okay.
And I guess have been, so from what I've gathered, most of the bigger developers have been incorporating this stuff from the beginning because the PlayStation 4 can use usernames differently than the PlayStation 3 could.
Yeah.
It's still up in the air, though, whether or not you'll be able, like, whether or not your PS3 stuff will stick with it or not.
Okay.
Because, like, you still, nobody's quite sure if you're going to lose that all. Kind of funny to go along with that, though, there's no PSX this year.
Okay.
So there's no PlayStation Experience happening around the Game Awards, like there have been for the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Last year at PSX, Sean Layden came out and said to Greg Miller during the little one-on-one interview they had that he does not want Greg to have to ask him again this year about PlayStation name changes. I don't know his exact quote, but it was something along, like, Greg asked him about name changing, and he said something along the lines of, let me put it this way, hopefully by this time next year, you won't have to ask that anymore.
Yeah.
Or, it wasn't even this time next year, hopefully by next PSX, you won't have to ask me that.
Yeah.
And now there's no PSX.
So they're gonna, it'll happen next year.
It makes me wonder if he knew a year ago that they weren't going to do the one this year. So he felt more comfortable just being like, yeah, next PSX will tell you about it.
Yeah.
There is going to be, Xbox is bringing back their thing, though. I forget what it's called now, because it just popped into my head. Xbox used to do, or Microsoft used to do, like, their own sort of show.
Okay.
And they're doing one, I believe it's in Mexico City this time.
Oh.
Because theirs was, like, all over the place. It wasn't just in the U.S.
Interesting. That's so neat.
Yeah, I wish I could remember the name of it, but it literally just popped into my head. Was there any other game news? That may have been all the game news. Yeah, that was all the game news.
I think so.
So let's jump down to some movies and television-related stuff.
Oh, right.
So, Damon Wayans. Right now, he is Murtaugh on the Lethal Weapon television series.
Yeah.
He apparently is not going to be Murtaugh much longer because he's quitting in December.
And didn't they change out the other dude?
Yeah, they fired the guy that played Riggs because the two of them had some disputes. There have been reports. It's, you know, you're getting two different sides to an argument. So yeah. Like, one side is saying that it was the guy that played Riggs. The other side is saying that it's Damon Wayans.
Yeah.
And it seems like some of the crew is backing the guy that played Riggs. Some of them's backing Damon Wayans. It's hard to tell who's who. But the one thing that seems pretty consistent is Damon Wayans is a bit of a drama queen on set and is just not fun to work with.
I mean, he might be. I don't know. I've never really heard. Yes. That's,
no, like not all the time. Like on this particular show, apparently he has not been great.
Okay.
Like behind the scenes, apparently he's very, like, diva-ish.
Okay.
And, like, I know his quote was something like, I'm a 58-year-old diabetic. Like, I'm too old for it. Like, he literally said, I'm too old for this.
Yeah.
Quoting Murtaugh in the movies. But, yeah, it's kind of a shame because at that point, like, I wish they would have kept Riggs around and gotten rid of him if he didn't want to do the fucking show anymore.
But also the thing is, you can't have Lethal Weapon without Murtaugh and Riggs.
So, like, Sean William Scott actually isn't bad so far. He's not Riggs, and he's not playing a character like Riggs. His character is very different. Whereas Riggs was very, at least, like, in the movie and in the show, he was very much kind of, I mean, he was suicidal. Like, he didn't care if he lived or died.
Yeah.
Sean William Scott is less of the, I'm going to jump off of a roof to catch the bad guy, as much as he climbed the side of the building to get the bad guy out without either of them being killed. Like, in the second episode this season, those two were involved with, the FBI to take down, like, a guy. So, yeah. Like, the guy turned out to not actually be, like, a bad guy. He just kind of got wrapped up with the wrong people, essentially. At least that's the impression I got.
Yeah.
And the FBI were literally getting ready to, like, break in with a SWAT team, and they were going to shoot first and ask questions later. And Sean William Scott instead climbed the outside, like, fire escapes, and then brought the guy out through the window and across to the neighbor's balcony and through their apartment instead, and got him, like, arrested without getting, you know, murdered in the process.
Okay.
And, like, he's less prone to shooting guns and all.
But, I mean, the thing is, like, what I mean is, it's Lethal Weapon. It's no. Murtaugh and Riggs. Like,
I agree with you.
If you get, you've already gotten rid of Riggs, for however you did it, I don't know.
They killed him.
You killed Riggs.
Like, that's the worst part is, it's like, alright, I wish it wasn't a, he's dead. Maybe it's like he got shot at the end of the season. Maybe this whole season he's just in a fucking coma. Pull a soap opera.
I mean, they could do it.
They can't because they've literally already told us that he's dead.
Okay.
Unless
he's in witness protection.
No, because I mean he got killed by somebody that's dead.
Okay.
So like they really wrapped it up, so he's just gone.
And so now you're gonna have this show called Lethal Weapon, but it's no longer Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
Because the two main characters are no longer the main characters of Lethal Weapon.
Yep. I mean, the show apparently only has a 13-episode order this year, so it'll be wrapped up in December.
Yeah.
And that's when Wayans is looking to exit.
Yeah.
Whether or not he definitely will or not, like, it sounds like producers and everything are trying to find out if that's really what he wants, or if it was just kind of having a bad day, ended up talking to the press when he probably shouldn't have, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, he has always been the least entertaining part of that show.
Yeah.
Like, he's just...
And doesn't he already have another show on TV?
No.
I thought I saw that he has one of the Wayans. His son has...
His son looks just like him.
Yeah.
Just, I think his son has hair right now.
Yeah.
No, his son is on a sitcom where it's, him and his wife are, living with his, client, who is, like, a famous pop star.
Yeah, that's right. Preston and Steve interviewed the guy who wrote that show. That's right.
Yeah. It's not a bad show. I like Damon Wayans Jr., though. He's
just
funny.
The guy who wrote that show, that legitimately was his life. Like, the pop star was one of the Jonas... Not one of the Jonas Brothers. One of One Direction kids.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Who moved in because he was looking for a place to live in LA or whatever, and ended up not finding a place because the place he found just fell through. So he ended up living there for like 2 years while he was trying to find a place to live. And they said he was a great tenant. Like, he wasn't a shitty person or anything. It was more of a place for him to go and just hide. But like, yeah, this is obviously
how the show picked up too.
Yeah.
Like, he had like the rock star, pop star kid had like a very public breakup and needed to get away from like the paparazzi. Yeah. So he went to like his like unknown accountant.
Yeah.
And they end up like bonding and they let him live there.
Yeah. And they just over embellish a little bit on it. Yeah.
But yeah, so Damon Wayans is not going to be on Lethal Weapon, maybe, which means there probably won't be a season 4 of Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. That's really all they have to do if that happens.
And now the bigger movie related news. James Gunn is apparently going to be writing the Suicide Squad sequel for Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
He's also in talks to direct.
Hopefully he does good.
I mean, like, I think that is, much like Guardians of the Galaxy, that is a team that I think would benefit from his writing style.
Yeah.
Because, like, the first Suicide Squad movie had good humor to it.
Yeah.
But it didn't have any, like, substance beyond that humor, which is kind of why it wasn't great. But, hey, still an Academy Award-winning film.
It had good intent, and it had good concept. It just wasn't very well developed and well, what's the word?
Executed?
Executed, yes. So, yeah, I mean, him writing this, like, and that's the problem. Like, that's what they need. They need new writers for all their team. The movies that they're releasing are just so ridiculously dull.
Well, so, I believe Aquaman, which comes out in December, is going to be the first movie that Zack Snyder hasn't been around for.
Yeah.
Like, I think because Justice League was the last DCEU movie that came out.
Yeah.
So I believe that he had already kind of stepped away from all of that prior to Aquaman getting really into production.
Yeah.
So
We'll see how that works out.
Yeah. Yeah, we will. Because, I mean, Aquaman is December, so it's only a few months away.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm excited that James Gunn got hired for that, because I think he can do a good Suicide Squad movie. I mean, like, he made the Guardians good, and nobody knew what they were.
Yeah.
And now, like, he's going to play with at least one super popular character in the form of Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, that movie had a decent cast. Like, it had fucking Will Smith.
Yeah, like, it had a great cast. It just, again, it just, everything was executed poorly in that movie. Like, if they just had somebody directing it a little bit differently, or if they had just gone in a slightly different direction, it probably would have been a lot better of a movie than what it was.
Yeah.
Just the execution of everything in that movie was just not there.
That movie was still better than Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I can sit down and watch Suicide Squad one or two times in, like, 2 or 3 months. Batman vs. Superman, I haven't even thought about sitting down and rewatch.
Like, I watched it one time outside of the theater. I watched the extended edition.
Yeah.
Because it added a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And it does. Like, honestly, the stuff that got added helped make the story make even, like, a little bit of sense where it really made none before.
Yeah.
But still not a good movie.
Yeah.
Like, the last 20 minutes are awesome. But the 3 hours before that, not good at all.
Yeah. And that's what they have to realize is we're going to see these superhero action movies for a lot of superhero action and not just boring disposition for 2.5 hours.
I'm good with the disposition and the character building. It's just like,
it can't be boring.
Zack Snyder's not good at that. He's good at big set piece action stuff.
Yeah.
Not good at character drama and development.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you remember me talking about this before. Last year in January, Marvel did a series called No Surrender. It was Avengers No Surrender.
Yeah.
It was a weekly, I want to say it was 12 part, might have actually been a few extra, series where a large group of Avengers had to defend the planet after the planet was literally stolen and moved to another part of the universe.
Yeah.
For like this twisted game between two of the elders of the universe.
Yeah.
It introduced a new character called Voyager who implanted herself as a founding member of the Avengers, but really ended up not being.
Okay.
It was actually, especially for an event that was a weekly series, it was actually very well executed. It's also what brought back the Hulk as the Immortal Hulk, where Bruce Banner gets murdered and then at night becomes the Hulk and comes back to life, basically.
Okay.
Which that book is actually pretty good. They're doing a sequel, though.
Awesome.
It's called No Road Home. It's going to bring the Voyager back. Pretty much all the Avengers that were involved in No Surrender are going to be there. It's going to be a 10-issue, I believe, weekly series that starts next winter-ish. So, like, early 2019.
Okay.
And apparently Rocket Raccoon is actually going to be one of the Avengers in this.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So, they're relaunching a bunch of books. They announced it at New York Comic Con. They're launching a new Black Widow book and some other stuff. One of them is they are relaunching Guardians of the Galaxy, which hasn't been running for a little while. At least at the moment, Quill is dead and Gamora is a villain.
Yeah.
That's what the big event right now, Infinity Wars.
Yeah, and she's the one who went and got all the stones and the gauntlet.
Well, actually, all the good guys brought the stones together for her.
Okay.
Like, they had a meeting to decide what to do with the stones with all the wielders of the stones, and she showed up after killing Thanos and took all of the stones.
Okay.
I think she quit. Maybe Star-Lord isn't dead. I feel like maybe Doctor Strange, it was one of those, like, the last panel of the last page of, like, the first issue was her stabbing Quill through the chest.
Yeah.
And I think the beginning of the next issue was, like, Doctor Strange using magic to, like, and Doctor Strange had the Time Stone at that point still. And, like, using that to, like, reverse it and pull Quill out of the way before being stabbed.
Yeah.
But I might be misremembering that. So when they relaunch that book, it's going to be a different cast. The only character that they confirmed at New York Comic Con was Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Okay.
Which, I didn't know this either. Apparently Cosmic Ghost Rider, future incarnation of Frank Castle, who died and went to hell and made a deal with the devil to come back as the Ghost Rider.
Okay.
But by the time he came back, the world was destroyed. So he literally just goes around space, like, wreaking havoc as the Ghost Rider, including going back in time and stealing baby Thanos to raise him to not become Thanos.
I like that. I think I'm going to have to read Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Yeah, Marvel does their Next Big Thing panel at New York Comic Con, and that's where they announced that. And the writer of Guardians, and who's writing Cosmic Ghost Rider, he actually spent like 8 minutes going over like the plot to Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Okay.
He's like, look, if nobody knows what this book is, here's what's going on. And he kind of made like a joke out of it by like 10 minutes later when a question came back to him. He's like, well, you see, in Cosmic Ghost Rider. But yeah, that's the only character we know that's going to be on the Guardians.
Okay.
But it seems like maybe Rocket won't be. Maybe Rocket's going to be an Avenger for a little while.
That's cool.
Yeah. I think he technically is in at the end of Infinity War.
Yeah.
Like, he is one of the people left on the battlefield.
Yeah, he is an Avenger.
So.
I'm actually shocked that he's one of the last few that are left. Like, it was essentially the original Avengers, all the side characters, and Rocket. Like.
No, I mean, not all the side characters.
Well, side characters as in, like.
Oh, okay.
Like, not Black Panther, but, what's her name?
Michonne's character.
Michonne's character, his sister. Like, a lot of the main characters went, pfft, but the side characters are still there.
Yeah, like the extras and, like, the characters that are there, have named parts, have big roles, but aren't necessarily, like.
They're not necessarily the heroes. Avengers. Yeah, they're not the heroes or the Avengers that you would think of.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. But Rocket being there, he is, like, the sixth one of the group at that point.
Okay.
Because Stark is out in space still.
Okay.
So, like, when you look at that lineup, it is six Avengers at the end there.
Oh, right, yeah. Because
there's somebody else in the group, too. Because didn't Black Widow not fade away? Or not Black Widow, Scarlet Witch?
No, she did fade away.
Did she?
Yeah. Scarlet Witch faded away. The end was Thor,
Cap.
Thor, Cap, Banner.
Black Widow.
Black Widow.
Rocket.
Rocket, Iron Man, Nebula.
But those two were out in space.
But they're out in space right now. So the only Avenger we don't know whether or not they're alive is
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
That's true.
Because after seeing Ant-Man,
you know where Ant-Man's at.
Yeah.
And so the last bit of news. Last week we talked about Toys R Us might be coming back from bankruptcy.
Yes.
It happened.
So they're back.
They are now going to be relaunching as Jeffrey's Toy Box.
Okay.
It seems like, so from what I was reading about this, they're not just going to be Toys R Us again. They're a wholesale toy distributor. So Jeffrey's Toy Box is a fully outfitted organization with design, development, and global sourcing expertise. Portfolio includes popular brands like Journey Girls, Fastlane, True Heroes, You and Me, Imaginarium, Just Like Home, and more. This is all from comicbook.com also. Yeah. So it seems like they're going to do like pop-up stores in stores or shop within a shop sort of things. You know how, like, I'm trying to think.
Like how Sprint has a booth in, like, Sam's Club?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Or,
so,
yeah.
Like, maybe, like, Walmart will have, like, a Jeffrey's Toy Box section, and that will be all the toys.
Yeah.
Like, something like that.
Okay.
They're not necessarily going to have their own dedicated stores, right now.
Which, you know, that's fine. Just bring back, like, start to bring back the toy stores, because I can't think of any toy stores left now that...
There aren't any.
Yeah.
But that's because toy stores were always too expensive.
Yeah.
Like, toys are fucking expensive.
They are.
And, like, parents would rather go to Walmart where things are a little bit cheaper, where they can also buy the other stuff they need, or buy it on Amazon and have it just shipped to their house.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a little weird that it happened so quickly, but at the same time, it does make sense. Because, like, another company basically just purchased the rights to everything from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're doing stuff. So right. Good for them, I guess.
It'll be cool to see how fast they like get back on their feet.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be. They're looking to have some of these little store in a store things set up in November, like for for like the Christmas season basically.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So
maybe it might be like the Halloween stores and stuff too. You know how like Spirit Halloween they're only around for from like end of September till
so they move into the gutted Toys R Us in Deptford for two months
until Christmas is up, and then they move out.
That is a Halloween store right now.
Yeah, it is.
Erica went in there. Apparently, it is too big for the amount of product that they have.
Most of those Halloween stores are like that, where they have too much space.
But this one apparently is especially some, because Toys R Us's were big stores.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I told her, I'm like, you know, just because it's a big store doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be, like, full in there. And she came home, she's like, you were right. Like,
yeah.
They did not have much going on.
I remember when we lived up, like, in the Collinswood area, the Westmont Shopping Center, they always had that Halloween store come up.
Yeah, the ShopRite. Or the Superfresh.
Superfresh. That was so barren. Like, it was a huge...
Yeah, and they always had, like, that, like, they put up, like, a fake, like... sheet wall basically around it to block a whole bunch of the store that they weren't using.
Yeah,
because it was just a fucking supermarket. It was huge.
Yeah. Was it just no, they didn't put this Halloween store in a supermarket, did they?
Yeah, they put it where Superfresh used to be. They used the old Superfresh building.
That's where Target is now.
Right? No.
Oh, there were two supermarkets in that shopping center.
No, so where Target is now used to be Clover way back in the day.
Okay.
Like in the 90s, when you were just a wee little lad.
And you were just a little bit wee, less little.
So you know where the Wells Fargo is now?
Yeah.
So the Wells Fargo used to be in the big tower across the parking lot.
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. So that Wells Fargo was built there.
Yeah.
That plot of land was a supermarket.
Yeah.
So it was there was a large building there connected to the edge of the, what is that, the H&R Block or the GNC, I think is the last store there. Yeah, yeah. From there to like the edge of the parking lot. Was Superfresh.
I remember that, but there used to be a supermarket where Target is now.
Yeah, so when Clover closed down, Superfresh moved from that end store to the Clover shop.
Okay.
And then the original Superfresh location just kind of stayed empty, and eventually like the Halloween store used to go in there at Halloween.
Yeah.
And then Wells Fargo bought the land, tore down the building, and built their bank.
Yeah. And now the Wells Fargo building is just an empty building.
No, it's like an office building.
Is it?
Yeah, I think it's a Wells Fargo office building. Oh. The branch is just now like the actual branch to get your bank money stuff done at.
All right. Makes sense though. Okay.
Yeah. Cause I want to say actually Clover actually used to take up the whole strip.
I have no idea what Clover even is.
It was like a Bradley's.
Okay. Yeah, it would
I tried to go for the other, like, oldest one I could think of.
It would make sense that they took up so much space. Like, at least Not all of it, but because there was always open floor plans.
Not going back towards the daycare, going towards the edge. So I think they took up like where like Joanne Fabric used to be or still is or whatever.
Okay.
I could be wrong though, because like I said, that was back in the 90s when that's why behind there is called Clover Hill.
I didn't even realize. I didn't know that.
Oh, man.
I didn't know there was a
You're from the damn area.
I've never been to Clover Hill. I stayed in my house.
Man.
That's it. I literally stayed in my house and played video games all day.
Man, you're the worst.
No, I'm us.
I knew about this.
You're also 3 years older than me? 2 years older than me?
Yeah, and apparently I went outside more.
Yeah, you absolutely did.
I don't even know how we ended up on that.
I don't know. Talking about the Halloween stores and how
the
Jeffrey's toy box should be like a Halloween store type thing. A temporary thing.
I think it would be a stupid idea for them to go into the old Toys R Us spots, but I think they're still in the Locust Grove Shopping Center when you're coming up Almanesson, where the GameStop is and the Salad Works and the Moe's.
Yeah.
I think that end shop there is still empty and they still put a Halloween shop in there every year.
Yeah.
That would probably be a good size for something like that.
Yeah.
Like just big enough to get like the main toys out, but not oversaturate it with too much stuff.
Yeah.
Which could then in turn help maybe like keep the retail side of it a little cheaper.
Yeah.
Like, you know, instead of those toys being $19.99, maybe they're $18.99 or something. Save a dollar.
Hopefully. You never know. You'll never know.
Yeah. But yeah, that's all the news, unless you had anything else.
No, not that I can think of.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on to what we were up to this past week.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Oh, me? Yeah, so I breezed through Iron Fist Season 2.
Yeah, you did. Don't talk past Episode 7.
I can't remember. We can talk about it with you, or you can tell me what you last remember seeing, so I don't say anything beyond that.
I'm going to quickly look up the episode, so you go ahead, talk to yourself for a minute.
But, you know, why do I have to talk to myself? I never answer myself. But
I don't believe that for a second.
If I were to answer myself, that's when I would worry. But yeah, I started watching it last week after we recorded, and I finished it Sunday morning before the Eagles played, and oh my god, is that such a better series than pretty much any of the season twos in the Marvel Netflix universe.
So, episode 7 is the episode where Colleen starts training Danny.
Okay. All right. So his leg was already broke.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That seems about right. Because I watched episode, I think, 7 through 10 all in one sitting. Because they were all pretty short. They were all like shorter episodes. Most of them were no more longer than like 52 minutes. I think one of them might have only been like 48 or 49 minutes.
Okay.
And it just, I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Yeah, I mean, up to episode 7, I think this is leaps and bounds better than season 1.
Yeah.
And so far, it has kept my attention better than Luke Cage season.
Yeah, it kept my attention better than most of the other shows for season 2.
That is true.
I would say like right now season 1 Daredevil is the best. I really feel like this is on par or equal to season 2 Daredevil, so pretty close to second best.
I don't know. I would say Punisher is second best, but I would say that so far this is probably on par with season 2 of Daredevil.
Yeah. And it's so good. And like wait till you get to the end. Wait till you see the last couple of scenes. Like the very last scene blew my mind. I was like, "Holy shit. I did but didn't see that I kind of saw something like that happening, but I didn't see exactly that happening." And you'll probably get it when you see it. Get what I'm saying?
Okay.
Ward is a lot cooler of a character in this one. The sister sucks.
Yeah, and I mean, she's supposed to.
Yeah.
I think, so where Jessica Jones and Luke Cage failed was neither of them had compelling villains.
Yeah.
Iron Fist has so far.
Yeah.
Like, Davos is interesting. The sister is actually interesting, even though she sucks. Like, she's not... She sucks in, like, the way you want a villain to suck, not in the way that, like, Mariah sucked in season two.
Exactly.
Of Luke Cage.
And the one thing that I loved so much about this season is it was one-track mind. There was no filler. There was no... There were two stories in this entire season, but one was a B story that you really only got bits and pieces of till the end. And then the other one was just the main story with Davos.
What would you say the B story is?
The box with her emblem.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Like that gets spattered throughout and you'll see more later. And then you find something out about it in the last episode as well. And that's it. It's just spattered throughout. It's not like a major thing. It's just this entire season was all about defeating Davos. I was just like, this is what these shows need. Not like Luke Cage, where you have five villains. Well, you have two primary villains, and both of them you know nothing about, and they're not very... One of them is just a terrible person. The other one isn't, but is a bad guy. And it's like, they're not compelling, but then you have to deal with the story of, like... Claire, and then you have to deal with the story of Luke's dad. Like, just too many story points. Where this was just straight up, it's Danny, Colleen, and Davos with Ward and the sister right underneath them. Like, that's it.
Yeah, and like Davos and the sister are both, they're kind of like multi-layered in a sense. Like, neither of them are villain, but they're both bad things.
Yeah.
And like you see the reason for a lot, at least. Whereas, like, with the Jamaican guy and Luke Cage, like, you didn't really ever get that. And there really wasn't a villain in Jessica Jones
season. No, like, Jessica Jones season two was all about the mystery of, like, there wasn't a strong villain in there really at all in Jessica Jones. It was boring. Nothing pushed me to watch that season. Or that series. Yeah, that season. And the best part, I stress this to everyone I talk to about it, the best part is that Iron Fist season two is only 10 episodes.
Which I hadn't realized until I saw you say something about that.
I didn't realize until I got to episode 6, and I was like, how many do I have left? Oh, there's only 10? Awesome. This is paced properly.
Yeah, and I will probably finish it up this week. I didn't have time over the weekend to watch any. So. Yeah.
But besides... So my next thing I'm going to watch is Maniac. I'm going to watch that next.
You don't have Hulu, do you?
I do.
Oh, you do have Hulu?
Yeah.
There is a show, I don't know if you've heard of it, I haven't watched it yet, called Into the Dark.
No, I haven't.
It's a Hulu anthology. It's Blumhouse production, or whatever they're called.
Okay.
So they do a lot of, like, the horror movies and stuff like that. It looks like it's, I'm assuming, a monthly release, where every episode is some sort of, like, Black Mirror, Twilight Zone, but horror-esque instead.
Okay.
Around the holiday of that month. So the first episode that just came out for October is Halloween based.
Okay.
The next one is going to come out in November. It's going to be Thanksgiving. And that's, I'm assuming it's going to go from there. I don't know how many episodes it is exactly. But I saw that. I'm like, oh, that actually sounds really interesting. I'm going to have to give that a look.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out. I'll probably watch it. I really want to watch Maniac.
Yeah. Like, so it's only one episode right now.
Yeah. So I could probably watch it before next week. I have some D&D prep I need to do. We're playing on Friday.
Fucking nerd.
I need to make a map of a town, okay?
And then fucking print on a map from Zelda.
No. Like, I need to make it more compelling than just straight through. Like, I need to make it. It's a zombie infested city, so.
Nerd.
I love it. And then I have to also develop Hyrule, which I will probably just use a map from Zelda. I at one point I had them go to the Temple of Time and they met Link and Zelda. And, after they finished that area, they ran off, but it was in a time bubble. But once they took the time stone and left, like, it's time caught up on itself there. And so everything was happening at once. So now I have to develop the actual city because it's a possibility that they might travel through it. Going to their next destiny. So, yeah, I've got some D&D prep I need to do, but I might have time to watch it. Maybe tomorrow, maybe Thursday, probably sometime this week, if not. Eagles play on Thursday night, so I might have some extra time on Sunday to watch stuff.
That's fair.
I'm trying to think. What else did I do this week? You came into me playing Garden Warfare 2. I just bought 4 games for the PlayStation. Unravel, Unravel 2, Need for Speed, and Garden Warfare 2. I was only playing Garden Warfare 2 because I didn't know how much time I would have. I'm really more interested in Unravel and Unravel 2. So when you leave, I'll probably jump into those and play those a bit. But
Unravel is fun.
Yeah.
It does get a little annoying at times because, like, while the physics are cool, sometimes they just don't make sense.
Yeah.
And the puzzles are more frustrating than fun.
Yeah.
But it's still a good time.
Yeah. And, but Garden Warfare 2 is Garden Warfare. Like, there's a little bit of a introductory story mode to teach you how to play kind of thing, like teach you the different game modes. That's all I was really doing, so I don't really have too much to say about it right now. Might play more of it in the next couple of days or whatever. But I did and have been and have not stopped listening to the new Coheed and Cambria album that came out on Friday? Thursday? It's called Vaxis Act 1. What is it? Vaxis Act 1, The Unholy Creatures, right?
I have no idea.
Unheavenly Creatures. So it's, yes, Vaxis Act 1, The Unheavenly Creatures. It is an amazing album. It's, like, you've heard of Coheed and Cambria. Have you listened to them before?
I know who Coheed is, yes.
Like, Eric, when he went to New York Comic Con with you guys a couple years back, he went and met Claudio Sanchez
and got something signed for me.
Their last album was just a regular album. They generally release albums that have a thematic space war story with them.
Yeah, because all of their albums are based on the graphic novel that he writes.
Yeah, the Amory Wars. I don't think this one is based off the Amory Wars. I think this is based off something new he's going to be writing. But it's such a magnificent album. 70 minutes long, I think about 15 tracks, something like that. And I have not stopped listening to it since I started listening to it on Friday. It's so good.
Yeah, I've never listened to a lot of them. I own one of their CDs, though, from like 10, 15 years
ago. Good Apollo, something.
Yeah, that one.
Because I went to their 10-year reunion like 3 years ago, so.
Yeah, so that lines up.
Yeah.
I really, the only two songs I know top of my head that I actually like is The Devil in Jersey City and A Favorite for the House Atlantic.
I don't even know those two songs. Like,
you'd probably know them if you heard them.
Yeah. Like, my introduction to them was Welcome Home.
Okay.
And I can't remember the name of the song, but the video was for 28 Days Later. I just can't remember the name of the song. But, like, that was my introduction to them, and I was like, about it. And then they were in Rock Band, and I was like, oh, these guys are awesome. And just over the past couple of years, I've just love listening to them. And I love the whole, like, space battle story idea with, like, I love albums that tell a story. That's why I love the Proto Men. I want to know, I can't wait for the wiki to be up for this album to say, like, what each song is about. Because I do want to know the whole story. But the basic idea is it's about this guy named Vaxis. And the first song is called The Dark Sentencer. And I think the main characters are in prison.
Okay.
And it's like breaking out of space prison and stuff like that. It's really awesome. So anybody who's into like rock, prog rock, slash like, I don't even know.
They're
kind of
like a emo rock.
Like they hit so many different tones in each album that it's really hard to like say what they are, like to genre them, in my opinion at least.
I just looked it up. Neither of the songs that I really know from them are from the album I own.
Okay.
Devil in Jersey City is from their 2002 album, The Second Stage Turbine Blade.
Yes.
And A Favor for the House Atlantic is from their 2003 album, Keeping in Secrets of Silent Earth 3.
Yeah. So. Which actually, I can't remember if it was the Good Apollo or the Keeping in Secrets tour that I went. I think it was Good Apollo.
Probably.
I can't remember, though.
Probably, because if I want to say Good Apollo was like 2006 or 7.
Yeah, and I went to the 10-year anniversary, which was a few years back. I don't remember if I ever talked about getting running a red light ticket in Philly on this podcast, but that was when I went and saw them.
Yeah, Good Apollo, I'm Burning Star 4, Volume 1, From Fear Through the Eyes of Madness.
Yes.
Because why the fuck not?
It's because it's all like, it's all to set a stage. It's a thematic thing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's also apparently the phrase, on the previous album, In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth, the phrase, My Dearest Apollo, I'll Be Burning Star 4, is written after the lyrics for the song The Light and the Glass.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, that record came out in 2005, so,
okay, so yeah.
3 years ago would be about...
I went 2015. Okay, yeah, so that makes sense. But yeah, give it a listen if you're fans of Coheed, if you're fans of, like, just awesome, ridiculous rock. Like, and or if you're just a fan of hair, give it a listen, because Claudio Sanchez has the most beautiful hair you'll ever see.
And some ridiculous voice. Like, his voice does not suit his look at all.
And his voice is amazing, though. Like, it's very high-pitched. But it fits, like, the music. Like, I love it. I haven't stopped listening to it. I gotta praise it as much as I can. The only other two things of note that I can talk about, I watched Walking Dead, and I finally watched the Christmas special of Doctor Who, as well as the new episode of Doctor Who. So, Walking Dead? Eh.
I told you I fell asleep.
Yeah, did you finish watching it? Did you ever go back?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go back. I finished, like, I fell asleep and Erica woke me up.
Okay.
Like, I don't know how long I was asleep for, though.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just,
eh. Like, and it's, like, they're building Maggie to be a villain when she's not supposed to be. Plus, she's only on for a handful of episodes, which means either she's gonna die or, I don't know, but the way they ended this episode, like, doesn't give them really much to go with Hilltop.
Yeah, and it's one of those... There were a handful of interesting scenes.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of it was just boring. It wasn't even interesting, like, character development.
Yeah. And the fact that you can only assume, based on the age of Herschel, that...
It's 18 months. It's been 18 months.
Did they say it was 18?
In the episode, but they've said before that it's going to be an 18-month time jump.
So an 18-month time jump, which means Herschel is at least one.
He's probably...
Why did it take them this long to go into DC to get the shit from the Smithsonian?
Well, they've probably been going into DC and slowly bringing stuff out. But they're probably working in, like, a ring away from them. Like, that would be the smart thing to do. Like, you do, like, a perimeter where, like, you go kind of go out in each direction a little ways, clear out an area, bring it back, and you just slowly go further and further out. This way you're never too far away at, like, for no good reason.
Yeah, I mean, but it seems like the carts, the carriages, the plowing equipment, stuff like that, were things that they've needed for 18 months. But they were like, oh, let's go to the Smithsonian now. Like,
yeah, I mean, look.
And now you're also dumbing down Eugene. Because the reason Eugene was useful in the comics was because he knew all this stuff. Or he read books how to actually make the stuff and showed people how to do it.
Yeah.
Where at this point, like, maybe he knows how to make corn oil fuel, but that's about it. Like, you're dumbing down, like, a character who's not supposed to be dumbed down.
Yeah, and, like, I don't like the whole, like, I don't know, the way that, like, each of, like, the core group is, like, leading one of the towns, basically.
Yeah.
Like, I get it, you split them all up, and it's weird for everybody now, and all that, but... Also, as much as I like Jesus, the fact that he was running around just kicking zombies in the head was the dumbest fucking thing in the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he does in the comics, but yeah, he didn't even bother killing them. He would just kick them and keep walking,
and then would
somebody
let Aaron
else
kill them.
Like, yeah, Aaron would stab them. Like, which, I wonder if they do play into that being a relationship, because...
I mean, they did in the comics.
They did in the comics. After Eric died, Aaron and Jesus were a thing, so...
Yeah. So, I mean, it might happen. I mean, it's been a year and a half since Eric died, so...
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just, I was bored. I was bored enough that I fell asleep.
Yeah, I sat there and watched it, hearing that you were bored, and I was literally sitting there, like, hoping, like, I wonder if Supergirl premiered yet. Oh no, that's next week. And I'm like, now I don't have anything to look forward to watch because I have to finish watching stupid Walking Dead.
You weren't watching it when I messaged you, were you?
No.
Okay, I can't remember what time I messaged you. So
no, you messaged me during the day, I think. I watched it at night.
I was off. I took off Monday, so.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, it was just, it wasn't good.
Nope.
I'm not interested at all.
Like, I think Erica still likes it, so we'll probably still keep watching it. I don't know if I will see every episode or not, but.
If I didn't have Plex, I'd be less inclined to watch it. Because I have Plex, I'm like, alright, this doesn't go towards their views. So I'll watch it just to see how it ends.
Well, I did see it. It had the lowest ratings for a season premiere of that show ever.
I'm not surprised.
So,
like, especially because a lot of people are like, "Oh, this is Andy Lincoln's last season. What's the point in watching after? What's yeah. the point then?" Like, they could have ended it how they did, and it would have been a worthwhile ending. They didn't need to push any further.
Yeah, it's like, I like Norman Reedus. Daryl's not an interesting character anymore.
No,
like, he has not changed in 9 seasons.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
And I've not, like, I agree. I love Norman Reedus. But I feel like I've hated Daryl. Like I felt like Daryl has been too powerful, and Daryl should not be around anymore.
Yeah, like, I don't hate him, but he's just... He hasn't had much development as a character since, like, season 2.
Yeah. Since he yelled at Merle and was like, he's Korean. Ever since then, he hasn't really had much difference.
Yeah, like, he's had moments here and there, but I don't think he has enough to actually... And, like, honestly, like, had they expanded his character sooner, then yeah, because, like, Norman Reedus is a good enough actor that he could lead the show.
Yeah.
But I don't think that character has enough to be an interesting main character.
Yeah. Or, like, maybe actually let him be happy for once, and let him be with fucking Carol. Like...
No, Carol's with Ezekiel.
I know, but...
Because Michonne is with Rick.
I know, but let Daryl be happy for once. Daryl's never happy.
It's fine. Ezekiel's gonna die eventually anyway.
I know. But it's just, yeah, I'm over it. I'm over it. I hope this is the last we talk about Walking Dead until it's over.
Well, so how much did you cry when you watched the Christmas special?
Oh, I was ugly crying. Like, I was watching it, and I was, like, intently into it, and like, then it gets to the point where, like, both the First Doctor and him, they're, like, trying to figure out what to do, and the First Doctor, I think, had already left, and it was just the being, the testimony... having Bill there, and they're talking, and then it had, the testimony had the bald guy show up, and I was like, oh my god, he actually gets to say goodbye to his friends that I forgot had died in the last episode. Well, I knew Bill died, but I forgot that the hairless, I don't remember what happened to the hairless guy.
So he stayed on that weird ship where every level was moving at a different time?
Yeah.
To help, like, basically rescue the people?
Yeah.
But he was stuck on a level that, like... he could not get off of, I believe. So, like, the time on that level was just moving differently.
Yeah.
Because I think that whole ship was getting pulled in, like, a black hole or something.
Yeah, the whole ship was in a black hole, so the further to the bottom, the longer time took or something like that. But, yeah, so I was, like, I was happy, and then testimony touched his forehead and gave him his memories back of Clara, and that's when the waterworks started. I was like, oh my god, he got her his memories back of her. Does he know she's still alive? Does he know who she is? Like, maybe they're gonna, will they meet next season? Oh my god, this opens up so many points of opportunity for them. This is amazing, because I honestly loved Clara.
Yeah, I thought she was good too.
I thought she was one of, like, Bill Potts was a good companion. But we only had her for a season.
I think Clara was a better companion for 12 than she was for 11.
Yeah.
Like, I think her interactions with Capaldi were perfect.
Yeah, and it's...
Not that she was bad with Smith. Like, they had some really good chemistry, but...
It's also, we only had her with Smith for half a season to a season, whereas
a season and a half.
I thought. Was it that long?
I thought so. Maybe not. Maybe it was only...
I think it was, like, it was from...
It was a full... No, yeah. It was
maybe, like, a full season and a Christmas special.
Well, because it was...
Oh, no, because we had... I think the Christmas special with Nick Frost was Clara as well.
Yeah, that was...
Was that Capaldi?
Yeah, it was Capaldi.
Okay.
Because... So, she came in the second half of the season 7, I believe.
Yeah.
Because that was... Amy and Rory... died in, like, the mid-season.
Yeah.
And I believe she had that full season and then another season after that with Smith.
I can't remember, but I feel like it's mostly, like, we knew Smith as Amy and Rory. Like, we knew it as Smith, Amy, and Rory. And that's it.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, her companionism with Matt Smith, just, it wasn't the same, because it's not, like, that's not the story we were used to with Matt Smith. Whereas Capaldi, we knew her as a companion. She was getting to learn him as much as we were getting to learn him, because he was a new... It was like, that was a dynamic we didn't really get to see much of since Rose and Tennant.
And you know what? You were actually right. It was so. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It was 8 episodes and then 2 specials. Because she was in the Day of the Doctor, the 50th right. anniversary special, yeah. and then the Time of the Doctor was the Regeneration Christmas special.
Yeah.
So she it was just a half season of that, but she had been in 2 Christmas specials.
Yeah.
Because she was in The Snowmen as, like, the Victorian Clara.
Yeah.
And then in the Time of the Doctor as, like, normal Clara.
Yeah.
And then she had been in a couple of episodes. I think just the one episode, actually. She was in Asylum of the Daleks.
Yeah. She was the Dalek.
So, like, she had been in a bunch of episodes.
But she wasn't companion until the Wi-Fi episode.
Yeah, the Bells of St. John.
Yes. But, yeah, so they get to that point. They give him his memories back of her, and that I'm just like, oh my god, and I'm just bawling my eyes out, crying, and like, oh, it was so good. And then he goes in and regenerates and destroys the TARDIS. I was like, isn't this like the third time they've done that, where the regeneration powers destroy the TARDIS?
I mean, they're aggressive powers, apparently.
Yeah, like,
actually, I think it's been.
But it's like the power of the regeneration gets more and more aggressive with each regeneration.
Yes and no. So, like, Tennant's basically destroyed the inside of the TARDIS, so it had to be so it reconfigured itself for Smith.
Yeah.
Smith didn't regenerate fully in the TARDIS, so he used his regeneration powers in the town to take out all the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then when he finally regenerated, it was a real quick, like, snap change.
Yeah.
In the TARDIS.
But I'm like, but I mean, like, if you, like, looking at the Christmas special alone, when they showed the regeneration of 1 to 2, it was just a whoosh, and a change. It wasn't like, oh, like, type
maybe
of
that's
thing.
Because he was so old at that point. Like, yeah. he lived, what, like, 800 years as that doctor or something like that?
Matt Smith Doctor was almost 1,000 years old himself. Yeah, over 1,000 years old himself.
Yeah, but I think he was only like 400, like, in that body.
No. He was like, I believe he was at least 400 before they even got to that Christmas special. And then he was in Christmastown for at least 500 years or something like that.
Oh, that's right, because he had gotten old by the end of that episode. I forgot about that.
And it's just, like, every regeneration, the powers get just more and more powerful. Like, stronger.
But, I mean, really, like, this one wasn't that destructive compared to what Smith's was like.
Like, Smith to Capaldi?
Yeah, because he literally destroyed an armada of, like, spaceships.
That was also a brand new regeneration energy. He shouldn't have been able to regenerate, which is why he went as old as he did before he regenerated. So, it's hard to say, but it was worth the wait. Like, I wish I had seen it sooner, but I'm happy that I didn't, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the new episode was just, I thought Jodie Whittaker blew it out the water right away.
Yeah, no, she was fantastic.
Yeah, she was great. I'm assuming these three are gonna be the companions for most of the season.
I know at least the two younger ones definitely are. I don't know about the older guy.
And I liked them.
Yeah.
They were, like, fun people to be around.
I like that she had to build her sonic screwdriver.
Yeah. I mean, she'll get her own as soon as she gets her TARDIS.
You don't know that. She might like this one.
True.
But yeah, I thought she was familiar. Like, she felt like the Doctor from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Which was, like, that's the thing where, like, you're never quite sure. Like, Capaldi didn't really feel like the Doctor at first. Yeah.
And they even kind of make that known in the beginning, in his first couple of episodes. Like, he doesn't even know himself. Like,
yeah.
And she didn't know herself, but she
until the end.
She could figure out who she was. Where him, when he regenerated, the whole time was just like, why? Like, his big question was, why do I have this face? Because he remembers seeing his face in the past.
Yeah. But, like, she had that sort of, she had sort of the goofiness that, like, early Matt Smith had and later David Tennant had.
Yeah.
With a little bit of that, not anger, because it wasn't anger that Eccleston had, but kind of just that, like, Eccleston-y vibe of, like, I'm just going to do it, just let me do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when she was telling them, it's like, give me 9 minutes in silence and I'll get this figured out.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of thing. But yeah, it was really cool seeing, like, how they've changed that character but kept it the same.
Yeah.
Because, like, you never know. Like changing genders could have drastically changed the tone of the show. And, but they didn't let it.
And it still could. Or if, not for the entire show, maybe just episodically. So, like,
I should say not the tone of the show. Like, it could have changed the tone of the character, and they didn't. Like,
yeah.
They let the character just keep being the character.
Yeah.
The one thing that I thought was weird, and it was totally just a throwaway line, but she says something along the lines of, it's been a long time since I bought female clothes, or something like that, near the end.
Yeah.
And it's like, but you've never been a female before. Like, this is your 13th form.
He had daughters and a wife.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
No, the thing I thought was a little ridiculous, but I also did watch back to back, pretty much. He knew, or they, I guess they found out that they were generated to a she at the end of, like, they looked inside of a mirror, or inside the thing, and saw that they were a female. But then, when she fell to the ground, she was like, what do you mean she? You're a woman. She already knew she was a woman.
So, the thing is, like, and it's mentioned in the episode somewhere that the regeneration kind of, like, scrambled the brain.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of those things, like, the scrambling happened, like, as the regeneration continued after that last scene.
Yeah.
Because that's usually how it goes. Like, the doctor's always off a little bit for a while after they regenerate.
Yeah.
Like, Matt Smith was really hungry. David Tennant slept for, like, a whole episode.
He did.
Capaldi didn't remember anything for a whole episode.
Yeah.
So, like, stuff like that.
But yeah, I'm excited to see where the season goes and where the show goes now that both Moffat and Capaldi are out. Like,
yeah.
With a new showrunner, I'm really excited to see how it goes. So far, I like it.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, not that I was ever down on it, but I'm definitely a little more eager to see what happens now that it's kind of like a whole new creative team going on.
Yeah, yeah. But besides that, that's about it.
Okay.
I think.
It's fair. I'll give you that. So the big thing I did was New York Comic Con. Other than that though, I basically watched most of the same things you did. So I watched Iron Fist, I watched Doctor Who, and I watched Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I also yesterday went to see Venom.
Okay.
Not as bad as the reviews say. Not great. I would say it's better than basically all of the Raimi movies.
Okay.
Probably, I mean, Spider-Man 2 is a decent one, but like, it's definitely better than 1 and 3. Loads better than 3. Actually does Venom, like, more right than wrong.
Was there an emo montage scene?
Nope.
Then it's not worth watching.
But Venom does call Eddie Brock a pussy.
Okay.
At one point, so Eddie Brock's afraid of heights. And so Venom has him scale a building at one point, like a huge skyscraper. And when they get done what they needed to do in the building, tells Eddie to just jump out the window and he'll, like, take care of it.
Yeah.
And then, like, it does, like, a flash cut to Eddie pressing the elevator button to, like, call the elevator. And you just hear Venom's voice go, pussy. So, like, the movie had some good comedy.
Yeah.
Particularly, like, the interactions between Eddie and Venom.
Okay.
Especially because, like, it's one of those, like, Eddie's basically hearing voices. Like, it's not like Venom is, like, popping out of him and, like, talking to him most of the time.
Yeah.
That does happen, like, twice, where, like, the symbiote kind of just comes out and, like, forms, like, a mouth and talks.
Yeah.
But 9 times out of 10, it's just he's hearing the voice in his head.
Okay.
And I think they did a good job with that, of kind of, like, building that rapport between them.
Yeah.
They didn't quite establish the bond enough. So, like, the symbiote wanting to stick around to help save the world, basically, didn't quite feel like it was earned. Or, like, them getting along at the end, if that makes sense. Like, without spoiling anything. Like, I felt like they kind of, like, skipped a little something in the middle that really would have, like, bridged the story a little bit better.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, the villain was definitely a miss, too.
Okay, who was the villain?
So I don't want to give it away. But it's a scientist.
Okay.
Like,
it's just kind of just some guy type of thing?
Basically. Okay. Like, again, like, the conceptually, I thought it was kind of cool. Bummer that there was no tie to Spider-Man in it.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, like, I think, even if Spider-Man wasn't in it, and there wasn't that, like, direct correlation of, like, Pete had the Venom symbiote, and then Eddie got it, I still think it would have been cool for Venom to have the white spider on his chest, which he didn't.
He didn't?
No, because there's it's not associated with Spider-Man, and that's kind of why he has that.
Yeah.
But, like, it was more of, like, the ultimate Venom, where he's not shooting webs, he's literally just, like, stretching.
Yeah.
Like, full, like, limbs to grab stuff, and, like, there was no, like, web slinging or anything like that, but he was, like, running up walls and shit.
Yeah.
And some of the action sequences were cool. The final fight at the end, little too much CGI, very it wasn't as good as it should have been.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that.
I'm trying to be vague as to not spoil anything since it did just come out this weekend.
Yeah.
But it got Venom's look pretty down. Like, he was a giant hulking monk.
Yeah.
Which Topher Grace was not.
No.
So it's one of those things where, like, yeah, like, Tom Hardy's, like a bulky dude. Like, he can get, like he's fairly well, like, muscles. But, like, when the Venom symbiote actually, like, takes him over, like, he grows, like, 6 feet.
Yeah.
Like, so he is actually, like, a giant monster.
All right, nice.
Yeah. But I would definitely say it's worth seeing. Like, yeah. There's no reason not to see this one.
I mean, I might see it for $5, maybe. Yeah. Like, I'm not very interested. Like,
so I wasn't really either. And then, like, I had seen some non-reviewers saying that it wasn't as bad. And like I said, like, we took off yesterday.
Yeah.
So I asked Erica, like, yesterday, like, early. I'm just like, hey, do you want to go see Venom later? And we went to Cinemark. It was like $8 or something like
yeah.
that. So, like, it wasn't like the $20 it would have been to go to AMC for it.
Yeah.
But, like, it was entertaining. Like, it was more entertaining than most of the DC movies.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't say much, though.
Yeah. And, like, I liked it considerably more than the Raimis.
Okay.
Especially one and three. Like, 1 and 3 I don't like at all. I don't think Spider-Man 2 is nearly as good as everyone claims it to be. I preferred the Amazing movies, just I thought Andrew Garfield was better...
I love the Amazing movies.
Yeah, like, both of those movies have huge problems. Like, they're not very good, necessarily, like, story-wise, but I thought the cast was better. Like, Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone were way more interesting and had better chemistry, and did their roles better than Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst ever did.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone always, like, looks at, like, that big train scene. I'm like, that train scene wasn't that great. Like, yeah, cool. Everyone saw his face, and everyone decided to keep it a secret. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Like, the scene where all the fucking construction workers move the crane so he can get to the fucking tower?
Yeah.
Way more emotional than that, because at that point, like, he hadn't been Spider-Man long. Like, but he saved this guy's kid from a fucking car getting thrown over a bridge.
Yeah.
And, like, that made the guy, like, oh, no, we're gonna help him.
Yeah, I always thought the Amazing movies were much better than the Raimi ones. I look back and fondly at the Raimi ones, but I always thought the Amazing movies were so much better.
I don't. I think Spider-Man 3 was the worst, obviously.
I love Spider-Man and 3 just because of how bad it is.
And I don't think 1 was very good. Like, Willem Dafoe was the best part of 1.
Yeah.
I don't think Tobey Maguire was a great cast, but there also wasn't anybody else in that time that would have been a better casting.
Yeah.
Like, Spider-Man 2, like, was okay. Like, I understand why people like it so much, but it's not that great.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Venom is worth seeing.
Okay.
But yeah, so New York Comic Con.
Okay.
It was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
I was only there Saturday, and then Erica came with me on Sunday.
You weren't there long enough.
You're probably right, because there's just so much there and so many. There's over 180,000 people that attend.
Yeah.
I was only on the main show floor for about an hour and a half total, I'd say, out of both those days.
Jeez.
I was only able to walk across about half of it on Saturday because it was so crowded.
Jesus.
Sunday when we got there, we went there first, got about halfway across from, like, the other side before it just got too crowded to actually keep going up and down aisles.
Yeah.
And honestly, we probably only got about 6 aisles in before we literally couldn't go up and down full aisles.
Yeah.
So they make bad decisions on where booths are. So apparently Christopher Sabat was doing, like, an appearance and signing at a booth.
Yeah.
Throughout the weekend. Like the whole show, he was showing up at this booth.
Yeah.
That was at the back of the convention center in, like, the tight area where, like, there's not as much room between booths. So, like, at a certain point you kind of get towards the back there and you literally can't move because everyone's just crowded around there waiting for him to show up.
Yeah.
Cause there was no sign posted on when he would be there. So there was just people just crowded around this booth waiting to see if he shows up.
Okay.
So, like, at a certain point, we stopped walking to the back. So we were missing probably, like, 8 or 9 booths in every row in that section.
Yeah.
Just because we couldn't get back there, like, reasonably.
Yeah.
But, like, there's always cool stuff to at least see on that, like, in those areas. And then you have, like, the big publisher booths and stuff like that. Like, Marvel has their booth and Image. Bandai Namco had a booth and Square Enix. I'm trying to remember, so Devil May Cry 5 had a demo there that people were playing.
Okay.
Kingdom Hearts 3 had a demo people were playing.
Okay.
I want to say there was like an Ace Combat or something like that had a demo. My Hero Academia, One's Justice had a demo. There was a handful of games. I watched a little bit of Kingdom Hearts and a little bit of Devil May Cry 5, right?
Yeah.
5. They both look like those games, but like in good ways.
Yeah.
So, I didn't get a chance to see any of the My Hero Academia because just the way the TVs were situated, you couldn't really see them unless you were the one playing them, basically.
Yeah.
And I was not about to wait in an hour and a half line to...
It makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I spent a lot of time in Artist Alley.
Okay. Because
that's like the cool place to walk around and look at all the artwork that people do.
Yeah.
And like New York is one of those things where they do have a lot of established, well-known creators there too. The downside is some of the bigger names are like ticketed signings. Like you don't have to pay for them, but you have to go there right away to get a ticket to come back and stand in a really long line later.
Yeah.
And like that sucks.
Yeah.
I get why they do it because this way they can control the line a little bit better, but like that still sucks.
It does.
But I did, one of the cool things that happened was I was just walking around and I saw Dan Slott just kind of like hanging out in Artist Alley. And like he was talking to people at tables that like it seemed like he knew, but like I guess nobody else realized who it was because nobody was like going up to him or anything.
Yeah.
So like at one point I walked up and like just to make sure, like I tapped him on the shoulder. I was like, hi, it's like, sorry, but are you Dan Slott? And like he turned around, he's like, yeah, I am. And so like he literally stood there and talked with me for like 10 minutes.
Awesome.
Yeah. And like he was super cool.
Did you give him a card?
I didn't have any.
But you're the worst.
I did ask him if he ever did, like, podcast appearances and interviews and stuff like that. And he was very honest. He's like, no. He's like, not because I don't want to. I literally can't. I am on so many books that everything is already behind by me just being here today.
Okay, yeah.
He's like, I've been committed to double and triple-sized issues for stuff that I literally don't have enough hours in the day to finish. So I'm like... He's like, the only time I do interviews and stuff like that is when Marvel just schedules them for me, and then I kind of have to do them.
Yeah.
He's like, but, like, thanks for asking.
Hey, that would have been a nice grab.
Yeah, like, and, like, again, like, he was super cool. Like, we chatted about, like, Fantastic Four for a minute, because he's doing Fantastic Four right now.
Yeah.
And I said that, like, I'm not a huge Fantastic Four fan. Like, it's not like there's anything against them, but, like, the last, you know, decade of their books just haven't grabbed me.
Yeah.
The two issues he has done so far have both had those, like, you want to just, like, raise your hands, like, and cheer for, like, the endings.
Yeah.
So, the first issue ends with, so Reed, Sue, and their kids have been missing since 2015.
Okay.
Everyone just thinks they're dead. So, the only Fantastic Four members left are Johnny and Thing.
Yeah.
And, like, they've had issues, they've gone on, like, their own adventures and shit like that. But they do. They think he's dead. They think that, like, their family is dead, basically.
Yeah.
And the first issue ends with Reed figuring out a way to basically send a signal back to Earth. And all they see up in the sky is the Big Four. Like, that was the signal that they sent. And, like, Johnny and Ben look up after, like, having an argument. And, like, there's just a giant four in the sky.
Okay.
And then the second issue ends where, like... The second issue is basically all Reed and Sue and the kids and everything, and you're seeing that they've literally been traveling the multiverse, recreating the multiverse.
Okay.
Franklin has the power to create worlds, and they use Molecule Man to, I guess he can split himself, I think is the deal. And like, not like multiple man split himself where like, they just come back to him when they die.
Yeah.
Like, he literally leaves like a piece of himself in every universe. And that keeps all the universes stitched together as the multiverse.
Okay.
So, like, literally every one of him that's in a universe is actually him. It's not a copy.
Okay.
So they're using... So he is with them, leaving, like, a portion of himself in every universe that Franklin creates.
Oh.
Yeah, like, it was really interesting.
That's pretty neat.
But they hit the point where, like, a god basically decides, like, no, fuck that. You guys... Like, you're ruining everything. Like, she was, like, the god of destruction. Not of destruction, but of, like, nothingness, I guess.
Yeah.
So, like, her entire purpose was to be there when the universes end.
Yeah.
And now they're being recreated. So, like, she destroys them all and then basically tries to kill Reed and Sue and the kids. And somehow, like, she agrees to let them call their family. So, the idea is she's... They are not the Fantastic Four without Ben and Johnny. Like,
yeah.
They're just Reed and Sue. But, like, Reed tricks her by saying he's going to call the family. He calls every hero that's ever been a member of the Fantastic Four and teleports them to the planet.
Nice.
So, like, you see this scene where it's, like, Reed's doing this thing. They only show Johnny and Ben on Earth get teleported. And then it shows them standing on this new planet, like, seeing Reed and Sue for the first time. And then it shows the villain saying something like, what is this? You tricked me. And then, like, it does, like, the big double splash page. And it's just all of them. Like, all of the heroes that have ever worked with Fantastic Four standing there. And Reed's like, no, I said I was going to call my family. Hmm. And, like, that's where the issue ended. And nice. That was just one of those, like, see, that's the way, like, a book should end.
Yeah.
And, of course, like, the third issue is delayed. So, yeah. Which is actually something that he said. He's like, I'm sorry, but, like, issue 3 is going to be a little late.
Wow. That's awesome, though.
Yeah, but, like, it was one of those, like, it's cool that, like, people like that are just kind of wandering.
Yeah.
Because I saw Dan Slott last year on the Friday walking to the Doctor Who panel.
Okay.
Because Doctor Who panel is always at Madison Square Garden, it seems.
Yeah.
And most of the time, it's the first one on Friday. So when I take the train up on Friday, I usually just stay at Madison Square Garden, go right to the Doctor Who panel.
Yeah.
Because it's at Penn Station. That's where my train gets in from.
Yeah.
And last year, they had done, like, construction or something like that, and they, like, the entrance was in a different place. So I was actually trying to, like, walking around the building trying to find it, and as I'm walking, he's walking the other direction, and I'm just like, hey, I really like Superior Spider-Man. And he just turned around, he's like, thank you, and, like, we both just kept walking in our, like, directions.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
But yeah, he just kind of, like, is there wandering around all the time, and yeah. That's really cool. Other than that, though, like, we bought a lot of art.
Yeah, I saw you guys posting a lot of it.
Yeah.
I would be careful about posting the art that you bought.
We tagged every artist on the print.
Okay.
So, like, literally, like, if you go in there and Erica put in the actual, like, description that they're tagged and you should go look at their pages.
Yeah, because...
So, like, it was actually more of a, like, go check out this artwork because, like, these people are really talented.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, that's why we made sure to get cards or take a picture of everyone's booth so that when we got back, we could actually tag them if they had, like, Instagram accounts and stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, we did think that through.
All right. Yeah, because I know, I remember when I did Too Many Games, the first time we went to Too Many Games, Paul was there with me. He was doing video and stuff for me, and he was going through a book and taking video, and so I was like, Don't do that. I had to turn around and be like, oh yeah, Paul, don't do that. Like, don't take video of this because you're likely to be able to steal it if you're just taking video of their art. And this is their art. Like, you're stealing their work. You have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And he didn't know. So he was like, oh, sorry. And he stopped.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Like, if anyone were to come in and be like, hey, take this down, like, we would. But that, I mean, yeah. Everyone was tagged in it so that they at least know, like.
Yeah. Know that their art is up there and we're promoting their art and their work. Or you're promoting their art and their work and whatnot.
Yeah, one of the artists is actually, like, an artist that we know.
Yeah.
Who, like, I've posted his stuff on there already. Like, it's Chris Capanna. He's the one that did the Scarlet Spider commission that I had posted a few weeks ago from Baltimore.
Yeah.
But, like, some of the other stuff was just really cool. Like, there was a guy, it's a shame he didn't have any more of these. I bought a 2B print from Nier Automata. He was the only person that actually did a 2B print that wasn't super sexualized.
Okay.
Like, I saw probably four or five other places that had, like, drawings of her, but it was always the most sexual drawings they could possibly fucking do.
Yeah.
And, like, it's just, it's dumb. Like, I get it, like, there are people that buy that, but, like, why not do, like, something normal also for people that just want, like, a normal, cool-looking drawing.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of times, like, those, like, just over-sexualized ones are usually really well done. But, like, I'm not going to hang that on my wall.
Yeah, no.
But he had one that was it was Spider-Man from the game with the white spider.
Okay.
That was really, really cool-looking, but he had sold out of them already.
Nice.
There was also, I don't know if you looked and saw, there was the print of Al from Full Metal.
No, I don't think I saw that.
So it's on, like, brown paper, and it's just, like, the, like, black, like, inked picture of Al in, like, this crest sort of thing.
Okay.
The artist pointed out to me, in, like, the bottom of it, you can see Ed's head. Because he's short.
Yeah.
So.
Nice.
The, like, thing that's surrounding it is, like, covering up all of him.
Nice.
But yeah, Artist Alley is always really cool to walk through.
Yeah.
It was in a much better place this year. Last year, it was in this weird hall where you had to take an escalator just to get into the room, and it literally dumped you into the room, and there was, like, no space between the tables or anything, so it was just, it was a nightmare to walk around. Like, you couldn't really look at anything.
Yeah.
Sunday, it was surprisingly busier down there than it was on Saturday, but I think that's because there were less big panels and stuff going on Sunday.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But both days, like, you could at least walk around and get to people's tables and, like, look at their stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the important thing, because, like, it's cool walking by and just seeing, like, what stuff they have, like, hanging, if they have stuff hanging. But everyone always has, like, those portfolio books with, like, all their other prints and everything in it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to... There was a really cool one. It was All Might, and it said, "I want you for UA High," in that, like, Uncle Sam style, like, World War II poster.
Yeah.
But that one was sold out pretty early, too.
Yeah, I'm not surprised on that one.
Because they had New York Anime Fest was happening at the same time in another building.
It usually does.
They haven't done it in a few years, actually. They stopped doing it for a while. But, like, Anime Expo was sponsoring it. Okay. So they actually put it in, like, another building. It was a separate ticket, though.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, so, and it was, like, a $50 pass per day.
That's nuts.
So, like, if you bought it early after buying a New York Comic-Con badge, it was, like, 40. But they only had, like, it was, like, a limited run of those.
Yeah.
So, like, if you didn't do it right away after, like, they went on sale, you had to pay the full price. And it was, like, just far enough away that unless you were actually going to be in New York for all 4 days, spending that money to go to that for a full day, you'd be wasting the money that you had for your Comic-Con badge.
Yeah.
Trying to think what else was kind of there. So there was a lot of really cool cosplay, like there always is.
Yeah.
Like that is one of those ones where it's so big that there's always really cool ones to see. There was a good Bumblebee.
Yeah, Erica posted. I saw that post.
And like the guy must have had like stilts or something like that, because he was probably like 7-8 feet high.
Okay.
I saw a couple of really good Iron Mans, but they were always kind of in the middle of, like, adjusting stuff, so I could never get a picture.
Yeah.
One of them actually was from the comic book, though, and had the, and actually, I think he did it in the movie, too, had, like, the weird, like, thruster wings coming out of the back.
Okay.
Which was neat. I saw there were a lot of My Hero ones.
Yeah.
Some of them really good. Some of them were kind of, not bad, but you could tell they just basically bought the gym outfit.
Yeah.
Like their gym uniform.
Yeah.
And then just threw on like a green wig or like the red and white wig or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah.
When you're cosplaying on the cheap, you have to...
Yeah. Like, I mean, good on them for trying. But yeah. Like, then you had other ones. There's a picture on the Instagram of it. It was somebody mashed up female Thor with Todoroki.
Okay.
And so the picture, you know how like Otakon and stuff always had like the actual photographers there that were like grabbing people in the cosplays and like doing pictures in like the fountain area and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So New York does that, but they do it in like the outside, like under like this overpass thing, because it's like an open area and they can just kind of set up like their camera lamp and everything and just kind of snap pictures against like a plain wall.
Yeah.
I kind of grabbed a picture while the person was doing that, but it was really cool. It was, like a Thor armor outfit, and in one hand she had a hammer, and the other she had like a fireball thing, but it was the red and white wig, like a female though, so it was like long straight hair.
Yeah.
With like the red eye burn thing that he has.
Okay.
Like it was really, really well done.
That's pretty sweet.
And then I'm trying to think what other like cool ones I saw. There was somebody did Matt Murdock.
Nice.
Like lawyer Matt Murdock, but after he had been Daredevil for a night, so he was all like, bruised and beaten and everything.
Or maybe that was actually Matt Murdock and he was just bruised and beat up after being...
I saw two guys that... One of them was just doing like the Matt Murdock. And another one was like the black suit with like the headband, but he had taken the headband off.
Yeah.
That like they looked enough like Charlie Cox that they could... they could have probably been his stunt double if like that's what they wanted to do.
They might have been. You never know.
I saw Charlie Cox last year.
Yeah.
They were both a little too short.
Okay.
There's always some pretty good Dragon Ball ones. Like, I saw a Future Trunks in an Android 18 that looked really good.
Okay.
I can't think of any more off the top of my head, but there were just a lot of really good ones. I saw one Ed.
Only one?
Only one.
That's because it wasn't an anime convention.
But there were also 180,000 people, so...
Yeah.
You're gonna miss them.
Yeah.
There was also a Supergirl. that she was the CW costume. But like, if you looked at her quick enough, she looked like the actress.
Okay.
Like, if you actually stopped and stared, like, you could tell it wasn't. But like, her face and her hair and everything, like, looked just enough like the actress that you're like, wait, what?
Okay. That's pretty cool.
I'm trying to think. So other than that, there were a handful of panels I ran to. I already talked about the Marvel one where they kind of just announced a bunch of the stuff they're doing and answered a couple questions.
Yeah.
I also went to the Tom King panel, which he is writing Batman and the Heroes in Crisis book where they just basically murdered everybody.
Yeah.
Most of that panel was him making dick and fart jokes.
Okay.
And making fun of people for liking the characters that he kills. So, like, and at one point somebody asked him, like, what sort of thing he'd like to do still. And he said, well, there's still some Titans for me to kill. He's like, my next book I am actually pitching is just a 12-issue miniseries where I kill Aqualad. It's just 12 issues of him falling off a building to his death.
All right. I mean, that works.
Because, I mean, he killed Roy Harper, Red Arrow, a Wally West Flash, and Dick Grayson in the last month.
Okay.
So, literally, he just had Dick Grayson get shot in the head.
Wow.
While on a rooftop with Batman talking to Commissioner Gordon.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was just like, fuck you, Dick Grayson.
And to be fair, we don't know that he is dead.
He's got shot in the head.
But, you know, it could be one of those things where, like, if the bullet didn't go through and went, like, on an angle, like, it could have missed the brain or whatever. Yeah. It's a superhero comic. They can come up with ways.
Somebody uses magic, reverses time, and he's back to life.
But it's still one of those, like, he gets shot in the head, and the next issue is just Batman, like, just fucking everybody's day up.
Yeah.
Because, like, he knows who did it. He's trying to find them. So he's just going through everybody trying to find them.
Yeah.
And then I saw some of a Todd McFarlane panel who, you know, like created Spawn, created Venom.
Yeah.
I didn't realize the Venom or the Spawn movie that's being worked on. I knew he was writing it, but he's actually writing, directing, and producing it.
Oh, wow.
And Jamie Foxx is going to be Spawn. Jeremy Renner is like another lead character.
Okay.
So like, that movie's actually shaping up to really be something.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually Jason Blum from Blumhouse is also a producer. Okay. I believe that's who he said it was. And he is aiming for like a hard R, like horror vibe for it.
Okay.
Like the way he described it was like, you had like Deadpool, you know, some F-bombs, a lot of violence. And then, you know, a little harder R was Logan, where it was a little grittier and more violent and visceral.
Yeah.
And then, like, and he kind of, like, stood in one spot and then moved just, like, a foot over. And then he walked across the stage. He's like, but Spawn is going to be way over here, like, deep in the R.
Yeah.
So, I think he actually said something like, he wants to make children cry. Like, that's the kind of movie he wants to make.
Okay. So, that'll be an intense movie that I might have to go see.
Yeah, and the last things from that panel, he was talking about Venom, actually. Because he had seen the premiere and all. And he basically said, he's like, the only thing I went into that movie wanting is for Venom to look like Venom. Kind of like I said. Like, he wanted him to be a big, hulking, scary monster.
Yeah.
Like, he said, the movie wasn't perfect, but they got that right, and that's all I wanted.
Okay.
Because I guess, and I forgot about this. Venom in Spider-Man 3, like, never got big.
No. He
basically still was the same size as Topher Grace.
He got big when they were doing this noise thing for him, on him.
Yeah, but that was it. He just kind of, like, puffed out and then, but never.
He never actually got, like, hulking evil.
Yeah, but, Todd started going into, like, why Venom was created. And I don't know how much of this is true, but he says that one of the main catalysts was Marvel wanted him to do the Spider-Man book. But he didn't want to draw Spider-Man unless it looked like Spider-Man. So they had to come up with a way to get him back into the red and blue suit while also maintaining this black suit that, like, one of their, like, higher-up editors had created.
Okay.
So the idea was, you know, you take the symbiote away from Spider-Man, give it to somebody else, and then Spider-Man can go back to being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So he, apparently, he just drew Venom, like, as, like, the big hulking monster. And his concept was, like, Spider-Man's a small character. Like, he's not big.
Yeah.
So he wanted to draw, like, Venom as, like, this big, imposing monster because it would never be a straight out fist fight between the two.
Yeah.
Like, if they were going to clash physically, Venom would always win. He was always going to be more powerful. So Spider-Man would always have to go against it, like, intellectually.
Yeah.
But apparently, he had no idea that it was going to be Eddie Brock that was going, like, they hadn't decided that yet. So, like, he just drew him as, like, this monster, thinking, like, he is just going to be a monster. It's not going to be a human being in the suit.
Yeah.
So, then it was, like, this whole thing of, like, well, now the writer has to also figure out why it is that he becomes this, like, snarling monster when he puts it on, but Spider-Man didn't.
Okay.
So,
yeah, that's
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you never know how much of those stories are, like, accurate, even when they're coming from the person. But, like, I'm sure at least a good chunk of that is true.
Yeah.
Because I know I read an article a couple days ago, I guess it was, where the writer from that time, David Michelin, I'm not sure how to say his last name, he said that he originally wanted Venom to be a female that hated Spider-Man because Spider-Man was indirectly the cause that of a miscarriage.
Oh.
So I guess the original idea was she was going to be a woman that went into labor. Her husband was hailing a cab, and the driver that he was hailing a cab for was distracted by, like, a fight that Spider-Man was having, like, someplace around them, and hits the husband and kills him, and the shock of that happening in front of her causes her to miscarry. Or I guess at that point actually have, like, a stillbirth, I guess? I don't know if you can miscarry when you're already in labor.
No, because if being in labor, there's no way the shock would kill the baby. The shock from you would kill the baby while you're in labor. Like, something would have happened in labor to cause the baby to die.
Yeah.
So.
But this was also the 80s.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it was the 80s. They weren't okay with that.
Yeah.
Not because of, like, the whole miscarriage thing, but because a woman couldn't be powerful in the 80s like that. Like, you couldn't have a female villain that was going to be more powerful than their trademark hero.
Yeah.
Was there anything else from there? I want to say that's it. Like, I have the same complaints about New York Comic Con every year. Like, there's too many people and not enough room.
Yeah.
Like, I realize the Javits Center is probably the only place they can do it. But at this point, they're on, like, six other sites, too.
Yeah.
Because, like, you have the Javits Center, and then you have where they were having the Anime Fest down, like, the street. Madison Square Garden, the Hammerstein Ballroom, and then there's two other buildings.
When you think about it, though, that's the same thing as San Diego Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con takes up the entire, well, the entire main area of San Diego.
But so,
like, you can go to San Diego during Comic-Con without a Comic-Con badge and still attend San Diego Comic-Con.
So, that's the thing, though. So, that's a bunch of things popping up around there because it's such a big event. All of these things, you still need your badge to get into.
Yeah.
So, that's the difference. Like, they literally don't have space for what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, I would love to spend more time walking around the show floor. I can't, though.
They might, like, need to, like,
it's not fun to be up there.
They might need to relocate it to, like, the Meadowlands or something. Like, to the entire football stadium. Like,
I mean, at that point, it would be outside. I don't know if they could pull that off.
I think the Meadowlands can cover it up.
I don't think it does. Plus, it's in October.
They could figure that out. It's one Sunday that they would, like, The Giants don't always play at home in October.
Don't the Jets and the Giants both play there?
Maybe. I don't think so.
That's what I was told, and I thought that sounded wrong, but you know football better than I do.
I don't think the Jets play in the Meadowlands.
I'm gonna look it up too.
MetLife Stadium.
Okay. So, yeah. I heard somebody in New York say that they both played in the same place, and I'm like, that doesn't sound right at all. Like, what happens if they're both playing at the same time? Like, I'm sure there's a week where they both have a home game, not against each other.
No, it's the same stadium.
Oh, is it?
MetLife Stadium is American Sports Stadium located in East Rutherford, New Jersey.
But I thought
it's part of the Meadowlands Sports Complex and serves as the home stadium for two National Football League NFL franchises.
Oh, wow.
Giants and Jets.
That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's always time where there's sometimes where it's one or the other, but the game could be at 1-4. Or they play Thursday and Monday or something like that.
Yeah, I guess that's probably how they work it. Like, they probably just, when they make their schedules, they make sure that they never have, cause they couldn't do 1-4 because they have to come out and repaint the field.
Yeah. According to Jordan, they they have the schedule planned out super far, like years in advance. So
I thought they planned it out after the Super Bowl from the previous year.
I don't know. I don't think either of that makes sense.
They do the schedules.
It's far scheduled in out like far in advance. Like Jordan said, like they have like 3 or 4 seasons of scheduling.
So. I think they have the locations for like the Super Bowl plan for 3 or 4
years. Well, yeah, they absolutely do have that.
But I don't think they have the actual schedule plan that far, because that's going to vary based on who wins and loses things.
Not always, not well, necessarily.
Because like the Super Bowl winners always play like the first Thursday or something like that.
Well, the Super Bowl winner always plays the first Thursday. It's the only game that like changes. But that doesn't really. I mean, the Eagles are now going to have their second Thursday game in 6 weeks.
Oh, are they playing Thursday again?
They're playing Thursday again. So this was probably pre-scheduled for a Thursday night game, and they already had one for the first game of the season.
Yeah.
So like, it might alter things. Maybe it just everybody plays the first week. Every team plays the first week, so it doesn't make a difference when they play, I guess, so to speak. So they might have, like, what stadium they'll have set up and just have somebody play.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I don't know. It doesn't make sense scheduling like that.
I agree. But, yeah, they definitely they need a bigger venue, I think. And, I mean, they're doing work at the Javits Center. I don't know if they're expanding it or not. But, like, if they expanded it, that would at least give some more space.
Yes.
That would help. Yeah. The Critical Role people did have insane lines.
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised. Like I said, it was our first time at New York Comic Con as Critical Role.
Not as big as I thought that could have been, but still very big lines.
Like, even Ashley Johnson was there, which was a
shock.
She
was not doing signings, though.
No. All right, well, she was at the live show.
Yeah, like she was there for the live show, and that was it.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, they film Blind Spot in New York, so
yeah,
they're still filming, which is why she's not a constant cast member right now. Yeah, I'm not surprised. I didn't even get a chance to look and see if they had any New York Comic Con specific stuff, but I knew you were going to have to wait in line forever to get their autograph.
So there definitely wasn't anything on the show floor that was specifically them. Like, there wasn't a Geek and Sundry or like a Critical Role area that I saw.
Okay.
But like Rooster Teeth had a spot, and like Crunchyroll had a spot.
Yeah.
So like, there were other sort of like internet things there. So I feel like they probably just, The merch would probably be like the like autograph like stuff they had at their tables.
Well, at what's the convention they did a couple months ago? Where they had a live show like 2 or 3 months ago, and at that convention they had specific shirts and posters or something just for there. But since then they have now released them to buy them online. So I'm not surprised that their line was long though. Like, and I've been getting frustrated because they usually release the re-air or the recast at 3 o'clock on Mondays. They didn't release the recast till about 4 o'clock today because there were sound issues during the live show to where like audio cuts out and in and out. So now I'm going to have to like listen to this 4 hour or 3 hour thing of people playing D&D where I don't get to hear half the shit they say.
Just skip it then.
I'm going to try to listen to it tomorrow while at work. And if it's no good, then I'll just watch. They have a critical recap of every episode before the next episode. I'll just watch that. Because the girl who runs it, she said that it's definitely going to be a lot longer than they normally do because of the audio issues.
Okay.
So, like, they're working around it and they're doing things to make the audio better. But, like, it's like audio would cut out when they're at the end of a statement and, like, it would just be completely zero. After they stop saying something, like, before they even finish talking, till somebody else starts talking, and, like, they had to caption, like, what they finished saying and stuff like
that. Yeah, and a lot of that stuff happens during, like, live recordings. Like, that stuff's hard to do.
Yeah, this is the first time it's been this bad, I think. In my, like, I've watched all their live shows, and I haven't gotten to watch this one, but in my experience, I haven't hated any of them. I haven't thought they were bad. I haven't thought the audio quality was that bad. The only one that, like, kind of drove me nuts was the most recent one before this one. But that's because they had somebody who, and I sound terrible saying this, somebody who I think had, like, Tourette's or just laughed weird. And so, like, their laugh or their tick for their Tourette's was just a high pitch, eep! And it would happen constantly. So, like, all the time I would just hear, eep! Constantly, over and over and over. And, like, I looked it up online, and people were like, oh, that's just how she laughs, or I even watched a video of them unveiling something, and it was Mercer popping out as the character that he was dressed as, or as the character who was the shop clerk. And I hear that yip again during this video. I was just like, this girl is everywhere. I'm like, I feel bad saying it if it's like Tourette's or something, but it's something that, like, it was an audio thing, and that's just what I kept hearing. I was just like, I almost stopped listening to the episode because it
some of that stuff can, like, it can pull you out of, like, enjoyment of something.
Yeah. But yeah, I haven't gotten to watch the episode, so I don't know how it goes yet, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was on Thursday or Friday, so I wasn't even there.
It was Thursday. It was Thursday. They played at, like, 8 till 11, but the broadcast was an hour delay because the time slot they have on Geek and Sundry's Twitch is 9 to whenever they're done. So they aired an hour late. Like, they delayed the broadcast an hour. So while they were recording, like, Brian W. Foster, who's, like, one of their main lead producers, he was out there, like, introducing everyone. He's like, one thing you need to know, keep your cell phones in your pocket because we are airing this an hour later. Like, what you see now is not going to be on Twitch for an hour. So don't put any spoilers on Twitch chat or anything until tomorrow because people aren't going to have seen it.
I mean, do these live shows tie into their, like, regular weekly show? Or yeah, is it like a one-off campaign?
It's completely tie-in.
Okay. Like,
they just continue the storyline.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe when they did live shows, they just did, like, quick little one-offs.
No, and I'm glad they don't do that because it would make live shows less valuable, I guess. Like, I'm more inclined to see a live show where they're doing stuff for the campaign than to see a live show where Sam Riegel or Travis is DMing instead of Mercer, and it's not the characters I know. Like, for instance, Travis Willingham was a barbarian, and his big thing when he was in a combat scenario, I would like to rage, is what he would say, and he would rage. Imagine seeing him say, I would like to rage in a stadium with people that you know this character, you're gonna cheer. But then have Laura Bailey be like, can I rage? It's not gonna have the same effect.
Okay. I will take your word for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, New York's a fun time. Like, it's expensive to get to, but if you can make it, it's definitely worth checking out at least once.
Yeah.
And, like, there's enough to do that if you're just not keen on being in the big crowds, like, there are always tons of panels about all different stuff that you can go to. There's, like, the off-site venues where, like, a lot of times there's, like, screenings of stuff. Like,
yeah.
Madison Square Garden and Hammerstein literally usually show, like, premieres of different things or at least big clips and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
I think they showed, like, 20 minutes of Aquaman at one of the panels. And
nice.
Yeah, so, like, there's stuff, there's plenty to do out away from the crowds.
Yeah.
The worst part is, like, food is also very expensive.
It's New York.
But, like, the good news is, like, at least the Javits Center, so there's, like, a cafeteria in the Javits Center that is all right. Like, they have a decent selection of stuff down there.
Yeah.
But then there's also food trucks, like, out in, like, the concourse that don't require you to leave the Javits Center and, like, go through and, like, check back in and get your bag checked again.
Yeah.
And there's usually, like 6 or 7 of them and, like, all different types of food. Like, I know there was, like, a mac and cheese truck. Like a Korean barbecue truck, a grilled cheese truck, a taco burrito truck, a cheesesteak truck, something else, like a truck that did empanadas or something like that. Oops. And then, like, actually, like, across the street, they had, like, another little lot set up with, like, 4 more food trucks. But
okay,
for that one, you actually had to, like, leave the Javits Center, which means, like, when you came back, you'd have to get your bag checked and all again, yeah, if you had stuff. So, like, it wasn't bad. Like, it was literally right across the street. You could see it from the entrance. But, like, there was that little bit of hassle where, you know, coming back and forth isn't the smoothest.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, I always have a good time. And I'm sure I'll go again next year.
Yeah.
And I guess the next show we're going to is PAX Unplugged in the end of November, beginning of December.
Nice.
Are you going?
I haven't gotten tickets for it yet. I haven't decided if I'm going to go or not.
Oh, you had, like, a good time last year. Go.
I want to go. It's more I don't have the money to go.
Oh, just open a new credit card and buy a ticket.
I wish it were that easy. My credit's already shot to shit.
$60. I think it is only like $60 for the weekend.
So. I'm I need to, like, look into things. They're doing some sort of scavenger hunt in Philly. Two people, the first team of two to win or to find everything or whatever gets free passes to PAX Unplugged.
Oh, that's cool.
I would need to find somebody to do it and see what time it starts and stuff. I also promised my friend's 10-year-old son that I'd go to his football game, so I can't not go to that. Plus, then I also want to...
Is it the same day?
Yeah, it's on Saturday. Plus, I also want to go into work, so... Yeah,
you're
I've got the worst human. I've got a lot I need to do. I'm exhausted.
Is your brother going to PAX?
He is. Yeah, he got weekend tickets.
Did he get them for him and Audra, or just?
I don't remember. I don't know. I think he got I know he got himself weekend tickets. I think Audra has one or two, maybe weekend, or maybe just one or two days for other people. But he has two. He might have two weekend tickets, one for him and one for somebody else. I don't really know. I don't pay attention to him all the time.
It's fair. Yeah. But I know, I have weekend tickets. Erica has a weekend pass. I think Drew and Sarah both have weekend pass.
Yeah.
So, you should come.
I'll try. I'll see if I can.
You can play games.
I know. I want to.
You can go buy, D&D miniatures or something. Dice.
I would love to buy... I bought a bunch of dice last year. I don't need any more of this.
I don't remember... Oh, that's right. You bought the cup, right?
I bought the cup of dice, yeah.
I don't remember... I don't know if they had this last year or not, but apparently they're going to have a larger section of... buy and paint miniatures.
They had a small section of buy and paint miniatures.
But, literally, where you would buy them and they have all the paint and supplies for you to do them right there.
Yeah, they had that.
Okay.
I couldn't remember
if they had
it
that.
It was a small section that you could buy and use their paint and stuff and paint it, but, yeah. I mean, they had a lot of used, kind of used, but unused space, in a way. A lot of people were sitting at these tables playing games. But it was you could have maybe expanded on some other things on these tables and stuff. So
I got an email, I think it was today, and one of the headlines in the email said something about expanded space. So it sounded like they're going to have a bigger room.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to be a different part of the convention center with one of the bigger rooms, or if they're just going to have maybe things split up into two different areas.
Maybe have the main panel room somewhere else.
Yeah, because I know there was that big area that was their main stage was kind of blocking off a chunk of of what could have been, used space.
Yeah, they could definitely have used main panel room downstairs and, in one of the... But I think the marathon or something was going on that same weekend. Some sort of run
was going on that same weekend. Yeah, there was a marathon that weekend.
So that's why they couldn't use the whole
convention center. Because that was also, I forget what day it was. I guess it was Sunday because it was the day that Erica came. There was the burger place across the street.
Yeah.
Not Shake Shack. It was something else. Hi-Fi Burger or something like that?
I have no idea.
It's next to the Panera across the street from Reading Terminal.
Yeah.
They ran out of meat.
Oh, right. Yeah. I remember that.
So, we were all waiting in line to get lunch, and all they had left, they had hot dogs. So, I think Drew got a hot dog. And then they had their veggie burgers.
That sucks.
So... Erica was fine because that's what she eats, but I'd have a fucking veggie burger.
You know, sometimes veggie burgers are good.
It wasn't the worst thing ever, but it still wasn't what I wanted.
Yeah, I know.
And it was Sunday, so it's not like I could have gone the Reading Terminal.
Yeah.
Or I would have.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to PAX Unplugged.
Yeah, I want to go. I'll see if I can. I'll try to figure it out, but...
Look, as long as you can pay me back at some point, I can always spot you the money for that.
I already owe enough people money.
Okay.
I still owe money for a concert back in March. And
okay, yeah, maybe I'm not going to spot you money if you're...
it's not that I am not... It's I haven't had the money to pay. I'm good for it. He knows I'm good for it. He knows I'll pay him back. He probably still doesn't remember that I still owe him money, but I will pay him back. But it's just... Things have just been too stressfully expensive this year. But hopefully, I'm getting back on it. We'll see what happens.
Like I said, I'm pretty sure it's only $60.
Yeah. So it's I don't think it's too expensive. It's not too obnoxious.
I think the full weekend is $60 or $65.
I think I want to look into what's going on, and if there's panels and stuff that I'd be interested in, then I'll definitely go or definitely try to find a way. But if there's nothing really I'm too interested in, I might try to get a 1-day pass. If I can, but I don't know if they do 1-day passes.
So the problem with 1-day passes, I'm actually trying to look it up real quick. 1-day passes are usually almost more expensive than weekend passes when things offer weekend passes.
Yeah.
So a Saturday pass might be $50, whereas the full weekend is $60.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? They aren't that bad. So individual days are $30 each.
Okay.
So it to get Friday, Saturday, Sunday would be $90. The 3-day pass is only $65.
Okay.
So it's the cost of a video game.
Yeah, but like I might just spend the $30 to go Saturday.
So there are a ton of panels. I didn't really look at them to see what they were. But also, like, keep in mind, like, you could spend hours playing a game on Saturday and then not really get to see everything.
Yeah. That's where I'm, like, at a talk. Like, last year I went, what was it, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think it was?
I don't remember if you went Friday or not.
I think I went Friday afternoon.
You might have.
I went Friday after work. I might have left at work early, or I might have even taken, I don't think I took off work, but I might have left work early or something on Friday and went after work for a couple of hours. And then Saturday I was there until they closed the dealer's room, and then I left. And then Sunday I was there until they closed the dealer's room and I left. And I remember Sunday, I literally walked around doing the same thing I did Saturday. I was like, I didn't need this extra day. But I didn't know, like, about any panels or anything like that. And at that point, I was still broke, and I was freshly gluten-free, still, kind of. So it was harder for me to figure out what I could and couldn't eat. And so I was just starving. Like,
I remember that.
Like, every day I went there, I made sure to get, like, 2 or 3 protein bars that I could just eat in case I got hungry. Because there's not, unless I go to the Reading Terminal Market and get a burrito bowl, there's not really much I could eat in that general area unless I go to, like, one of the stores that runs out of meat or something. I mean,
there's, like, that Greek place, so you could do, like, Greek food without the pita.
Yeah, but like, it's still a bowl. Like,
Or you fucking suck it up and you have some gluten.
No. I've gotten glutened over the past, like, month or so. It was the worst I've had it in a long time.
But, man, you could go get that roast pork from Denix.
You know what I would love to just go get a Denix roast pork sandwich. Or, like...
Man, if you end up going to PAX Unplugged, I'm going to buy them every day and just walk around next to you eating them.
Like, you're an ass. You're a total ass.
Some broccoli rob, some provolone. It's delicious.
You're a douche. Anyway, you said something earlier that made me remember something that I think you would like. You mentioned the Spider-Man video game. Binging with Babish just released a new episode today.
I have no idea who that is.
Binging with Babish is a guy who makes food from... He's an internet chef.
Okay.
And he makes food, like a YouTube chef. He makes food from, like, video games and other pop culture. Like, he had an entire Frasier-based episode. He's done South Park. He's done Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild. This most recent episode he did was Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man game. He used Aunt May's recipe book.
Oh, for wheat cakes?
Yeah, wheat cakes and dumplings.
Oh, right, because both of those were cards in the game. I forgot about the dumplings. I remember the wheat cakes.
So he made those. So if you go look up Binging with Babish, you should be able to see it.
Okay. Otherwise, I guess that's the show.
I think so. I can't think. I feel like there was something else I wanted to say, but I think that's it. I don't know.
Well, maybe you'll remember for next week.
I probably won't.
You're right. Well, if you'd like to find more of our stuff, you can head over to www.one-quest.com. You can find all of our podcasts and such on all your favorite services like iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, Spotify, etc. You can help us out by supporting us over at patreon.com/onequest. We are on social media, facebook.com/onequestonline. On Twitter and Instagram, we are @one_quest. And you can always shoot us an email at social@one-quest.com. Otherwise, that is the show, and we'll be back next week with some more.
Yeah, see you guys next week.
Bye.